Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight. We are in Columbus, Ohio for the big SB5 fight, and the big steaming pile of issue number 2 appears to be going down in the flames of defeat, as well it should. I mean, look, the mobilization that has gone on here in the state of Ohio is nothing short of amazing, miraculous, remarkable, you name it. It has been an amazing journey to get to this point. The mobilization, getting people out, knocking on doors, making phone calls, the political activism, getting members activated, engaged. I think that the Republicans have made a serious error in their calculation. As Machiavellian as this may have been, we're going to take our enemy out into the public and gut them. What has happened here is the enemy survived, and it looks like the tables are going to be turned a little bit this evening. Now, you remember Kasich was the guy who came out after being elected only a couple of days, saying, look, either you're with me or you're against me, and I'm going to run you over. You're on my bus, or I'm going to run you over, and just you try and stop me. Well, it appears from early results, this effort has been stopped. Question is, what happens tomorrow? What happens the next day? Because, look, these Republicans, they're not going to give up. They're going to continue to pursue policy, to pursue legislation, to destroy our rights. Well, our rights to make a living, our rights to collective bargaining, and you look at this collective bargaining thing, and it's almost mind-blowing that they would want to take this away. Because, in essence, what they've done is they've quelled labor. Okay, fine. You'll have a little say in what goes on, but you can't strike. We've taken that away from you. Now, here, I think they tried to neuter it a little bit, say, well, you still can't strike, but you can't negotiate for anything either. So I thought it was really interesting that today, and this is one of those things that just blows my mind, and I don't know if I'm going to get over this for a while, that John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, came out and did this this press conference. He was out there, you know, stumping for pictures and doing the PR work and the legwork for a group called Building a Better Ohio. Again, another one of these euphemistically named groups funded by people who nobody's allowed to know, because of Citizens United and because of our insane laws. But you know who's behind all this. You know the big money. You know the Karl Roves and the Cheneys and the Koch brothers. You know it's all the regular players, all the usual suspects. But I found it interesting today he was out giving his stump speech wearing a polo shirt with the logo from Pine Valley Golf Course. Now, anybody who knows anything about Pine Valley Golf Course, it is one of the most exclusive golf courses in this country, over in Camden, New Jersey. Now, you know, if it was me, I were the governor of Ohio, you'd see me with a golf shirt from somewhere around the neighborhood. You know, Ohio Golf Course or something. No. This guy decided, I need to show off that I was in Camden, New Jersey at a exclusive club that is invitation only and for you ladies out there, male only. So only men can play on this course by invitation. And again, one of the most exclusive places on the planet. And you go, that's the messaging you choose. You choose to go down that path at a time when, you know, you look at the gap between the rich and the poor. I mean, because this golf club is really a symbol of the wealth class, a symbol of status. And you look at the fact that the richest 1% of this country owns 70% of all financial assets. Those are the people who go to that club. You and I, we never get to go to that golf club. Never. We wouldn't even be invited to be a caddy. Or we wouldn't even be allowed to turn our car around in the Pine Valley Country Club there, because we're not their kind of people. And you look at the fact that, you know, the people who golf in that club, they're the ones who control 40% of the nation's wealth. The people who go to that club are the people who get nearly a quarter of all of our income. You look at the people who go to that club, and they're the ones who have caused the vast majority of the problems in this country for working people. So I think it's fitting that on this day when working people rise up, he chooses to wear a symbol of the very thing that we're fighting against. This exclusive investor class institution like the Pine Valley Club. It's remarkable to me. But you know, you look at what's going on here in Ohio and like when we went to Wisconsin, it was about how do we go about this at home? How do we build a mechanism to fight back? How do we organize? And this trip to Columbus to me, very just like when we went to Wisconsin, an excellent lesson on what we need to be doing as a nation. And over the next couple hours, we're going to be talking to international union presidents. We're going to be talking to journalists and congresspeople, you know, just average everyday working people as well. This last couple of days has been just a remarkable experience. And we're grateful and lucky and fortunate that we've been able to bring it to you. I hope you've enjoyed it. Again, we can't take any phone calls this evening. We are doing a remote on location, but you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you've got any questions, comments, anything on your mind, that's the way we'll go. And we do appreciate all of your comments. If you missed any portion of our program, therickSmithShow.com is the place to go. So we look forward to hearing from you. Look forward to the next couple of hours as we talk about the issue here in Ohio. And I'm just almost speechless, which is kind of a difficult place to be in for a talk show host when you look at the amount of volunteers and the number of people who have come out to support workers' rights and the support. Ready? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I'm really excited about it. I think our folks are excited, and I expect a huge victory.
AFSCME Secretary Treasurer Lee Saunders, who's on the ground in Ohio as Ohio votes on the repeal of the Republican attack on public worker collective bargaining. Saunders says the movement to repeal the collective bargaining attack is crackling with energy.
I've never felt the kind of energy that I'm seeing here. We've been knocking on doors and making phone calls and leafleting at work sites and having rallies and pumping up our folks, and they understand the importance of this vote.
Saunders says at AFSCME, all of labor and allied progressive and community groups are looking forward to taking this fight back against attacks on working families to Wisconsin and nationwide.
We want to continue the fight, not only in Ohio, but in Wisconsin. And I think this just sends a strong message across the country. When we win this, it's working families, people who are playing by the rules every single day, but cannot achieve that American dream, which all of us should be able to achieve. They're willing to make their voices heard, and they're ready to fight back. This is much bigger than this state, and we plan on work to develop the necessary partnerships and coalitions so we can fight back like ever before.
Young is one of the primary adjectives used to describe the Occupy movement as it fights to bring attention to the growing economic inequality of the U.S. Is age the reason Congress doesn't seem to understand what the movement is about? Jesse Russell reports.
While Americans have seen little movement in the average net worth, Congress watched its collective net worth blossom by 25% from 2008 to 2010. Congress as a whole was worth $2 billion in 2010, up from $1.65 billion in 2008. Those numbers were calculated by the website Roll Call. Roll Call also found that 90% of the increase in congressional net worth is concentrated in the 50 richest members of Congress. The median net worth of a Congress member is $912,000. While the wealth gap between the average American family and the people who represent them continues to grow, so has the gap in wealth between households headed by adults under 35 and those 65 and older. According to the Pew Research Center, the median net worth of the younger households was $11,521 in 2008. Now it's $3,662. For the 65 and older set, the median net worth was $120,457 in 1984 and has since grown to $170,494. The center says the housing bust is one of the primary reasons for the severe decline. Older homeowners have benefited by rising equity, while the younger homeowners have been experiencing a market in flux. The center also cites the growing cost of student loans leaving a heavier burden on the younger generation than ever before. Worth noting, the average age of Congress is 57, with the average age of a senator being 61.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Someone tell the GOP that Ohio's not for sale.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And still, I got to be honest, still shocked, kind of amazed that Governor Kasich would come out with his Pine Valley Golf Club shirt on to talk about this SB5 issue number two. Considering, like I said, you know, invitation only, male only country club, one of the most exclusive places on the planet. That's the messaging he wants to send out there. But again, this is a guy who said, either get on the bus or we're going to run you over. I'm sitting here with the Ohio AFL-CIO president, Tim Bergen. Tim, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome.
You know, this has got to be coming down to the wire. You got to be excited about the prospects of what's coming up.
Well, we definitely have had the momentum and the energy building and building for weeks and months through the legislative fight, the petition signature gathering effort, and now the campaign to educate and mobilize and turn out the vote against Senate Bill 5 and Issue 2. You know, this campaign has always been about supporting Ohioans who deliver public services, teach our kids, and keep our children safe and keep our community safe. And Senate Bill 5 is simply an attack in a way in which we haven't seen before in the state of Ohio on public employees, nurses, teachers, firefighters, all those delivering public services. And as a result, Ohioans have seen this as innately unfair, unsafe, and something that they feel is going to hurt us all and make our economy even worse. So we're ready to put a stake in the heart on Senate Bill 5 here at the polls closing next hour.
Yeah, you know,
I look forward to that as well. But, you know, Governor Kasich,
what frightens me is that you're going back to the good old days of patronage by getting rid of collective bargaining. We talk about this in the state of Pennsylvania all the time. We go back to the days of party bosses dictating who the state workers are, who the police and firemen are.
Country club in the most
exclusive places on the planet. That's the messaging he wants to send.
Folks can remember here in Ohio what things were like before 1983 when public employees got collective bargaining under the law. Before 1983, Ohio was the third leading state in workplace stoppages and strikes.
You're welcome.
There was uneven services. There was uneven compensation.
Well, we definitely have had the momentum and the energy building and building for weeks and months through the
legislative fight, budgets around,
petition signature gathering efforts. Now the campaign to educate and mobilize buildings voting against Senate Bill 5
because they couldn't negotiate for
fire.
This campaign has always been about equipment. We don't want to go back to that. We don't want to go back to the days where police officers can't negotiate for bullet proof vests or staffing levels or critical training that's needed. And Senate Bill 5
I want to see through
attack.
This,
see this as a
in a way in which we haven't seen before in the state of Ohio,
on public employees, nurses, teachers,
public employees,
rather than
all those delivering public services
in our society.
And as a result, problems brought on by this is
30 years of
innately unfair, unsafe, and something that they feel is going
to
hurt us all, make our economy even worse. So
we're
ready to put a stake in the heart on Senate Bill 5 here at
public
polls closing the next hour.
I wish the time
I look forward to that as well. But
talking about how to take rights away,
what frightens me is that you're going back to the good old days,
how we're
going to
rebuild our infrastructure,
getting rid of,
build better roads.
We talk about this in the state of Pennsylvania all the time.
Maybe
we go back to the
day party
like the Chinese are
dictating who.
Absolutely.
The
Ohioans were desperate. This year, in particular, for cooperation,
well,
our political leaders to come together, Democrats,
remember here in Ohio, what things were
labor,
before 1983,
to sit down and talk about investing again in our basic
law.
Industries, our technology, get infrastructure building going
state,
again,
and
like you said,
stop
all those things
strikes.
Which create our vibrant
was,
public
uneven
sector
tax
services
and
support our local
compensation
and our public employees.
We need to get our private situation and systems
back on the job and back in the middle class. And we squandered this whole year,
budgets around
last 10 months, talking about defending the rights that
going into
burning
buildings
wearing blue jeans
have
earned
over all these years
for,
to have collective bargaining, just basic collective bargaining.
We don't want to go back to that. We don't want to go back to the days where police officers can't negotiate for
bulletproof
vests or staffing levels or critical training that's needed. So I believe
Ohioans
see through this, see this as a political
well, it's hard to predict,
but
this organized labor
as governor. Public General Assembly has been looking at the real problems in our society.
I do know that
problems
when
brought
on
by
tonight,
30 years of
the pause button will be set for at least a little while.
Our industrial
but we know that they've got issues on the table right now
need to be focusing
that would
back
take away overtime
pay for
and
private sector
employees.
Would take away project labor agreements
spent,
with state-funded
projects. Rights away from people
would go after public pensions. Would go after injured worker benefits.
Build better
all
roads,
that stuff's still on the table. And we're just waiting to see what happens with this election. So we're
going
to be continuing.
Absolutely. Ohioans were desperate this year, in particular, for cooperation. Our political leaders to come together, Democrats, Republicans, business and labor,
jobs
to sit down and talk about investing again in our basic industries, our emerging technologies,
that, then we have a chance.
Infrastructure building going
we
again.
Like down
said,
this road,
all those things which
all
create
our
vibrant
race
public
to the
sector,
bottom,
tax bases,
lose,
and
support
our
local communities
going to
make
our public employees
the agenda that
we need to get our private sector
to build a new
back on the
job and
back in
the
middle class.
And we've squandered this whole year, last 10 months, talking about defending the rights that public employees have earned over all these years to have collective bargaining, just basic collective bargaining at the workplace.
Because a lot of times you see these campaigns ramp up,
ended, or just as
you think tomorrow
they
start a new way of trying to steal rights back,
all of this underage,
all of this
education,
with a different
you guys
have been doing, what's the
plan? Well, it's hard to predict, but
6 months, a year from now.
Just well, you're right. Everyday Ohioans came together
pretty extreme.
Like I've not seen in my lifetime to say when we win this issue tonight,
these
pause button will be set
for at least a little while.
They're attacking,
but we know that they've got issues
on the table right now.
These workers
that would take away overtime pay for private
so we just
employees.
Need to sustain the movement.
We take away project labor agreements with state
volunteers and activists
projects.
All over the state have come together.
Would
whether
go after
union
public
pensions,
would
go
after injured
worker
private
benefits.
Sector.
All that
you know,
stuff
should
still
really
on the
recognize
and
all the
private sector
what happens
with this
that
election.
Together on
so we're
going to
be continuing to advocate
public
for
sisters and
brothers,
policy
agenda,
machinists,
auto
workers,
bricklayers, laborers, electricians, our federal employees, all came together
private sector jobs through
one class of workers or
industry,
attacking all class of workers.
And if we need that,
make sure that we have a chance.
Sort of solidarity.
If we continue down this road of lowering the bar.
If we do that collectively, we have
this race to the bottom.
To get our country back and
readopt
FLCIO,
I want to make sure that the policy agenda that we put forward
is
to build a new movement for working families.
President of the Ohio AFL-CIO, I appreciate the time. Congratulations. I am hoping that's going to be in order very soon. And what a great campaign you guys ran.
Thank you for being in Columbus.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having us. Tomorrow, what happens? Because a lot of times you see these campaigns ramp up, and just as fast, they go away. So all of this communication, all of this outreach, all of this education that you guys have been doing, what's the plan for, you know, a day, 6 months, a year from now?
Well, you're right. Everyday Ohioans came together, like I've not seen in my lifetime, to say we're going to stand up for these workers, because we know if you attack like they're attacking in Senate Bill 5 and Issue 2, attacking these workers is an attack on all workers. So we just need to sustain the movement, sustain the energy. Volunteers and activists all over the state have come together, whether they're union or non-union, public sector or private sector. You know, we should really recognize all the private sector unions in this state that came together on behalf of our public sisters and brothers, steelworkers, machinists, auto workers, bricklayers, laborers, electricians, our federal employees, all came together to say when you attack one class of workers, you're attacking all class of workers. We need to make sure that we continue that sort of solidarity into the future. If we do that collectively, we have a chance to get our country back and readopt a worker economic model.
And remember, an injury to one is absolutely an injury to all. Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, I appreciate the time. Congratulations. I am hoping that's going to be in order very soon. And what a great campaign you guys ran.
Thank you for being in Columbus.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having us. Great talking with Ohio AFL president Tim Berger. And I'm sitting here with Kelly Troutner. She's the Deputy Executive Officer of Labor Relations with the Ohio Nurses Association. And, you know, you want to get a different perspective. You understand this is an attack on public sector workers. But, you know, it can affect nurses as well. That's why I've asked Kelly to sit down with us and talk a little bit about this fight. Kelly, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you for having me.
You know, how exactly does this SB5 fight affect nurses? I wouldn't have thought that. You know, there are many public sector nurses, are there?
Sure, there are. There are nurses who work in public hospital settings. There are nurses who work in corrections settings, public health nurses, nurses in our schools who take care of our kids, nurses who work in indigent care clinics and prenatal clinics for underserved populations. There are nurses all through the public sector.
Yeah, you bring up corrections nurses, and you know, it just flashed a couple, not too long ago, I was reading a story where because of staffing levels in another state, I think it was Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, a nurse was beaten to death and everything that goes with that in a corrections situation. And I thought immediately, how could you let that happen? And I think of this fight, and I'm going, is that what you want here?
Absolutely. In a setting like a correction setting or a psychiatric setting, it's imperative that there is adequate security, that there are adequate numbers of nurses to care for the patients, that the environment is conducive to providing safe care. For instance, making sure that chairs are fixed and attached to the floor so they can't be used as weapons and those sorts of things.
So now what have you folks at the Ohio Nurses Association been doing as part of this grand coalition? I've talked to all different union members. And one of the things I think this has really done, and one of those unintended consequences that the Republicans, I don't think, thought through, is that this would really bring people together who, you know, they may not have been together a year ago.
Sure. And we don't view this as a partisan issue. We view this as a rights issue. We've joined the We Are Ohio Coalition, and we are a member of the Ohio AFL-CIO. We circulated petitions. We've gone to the rally. We testified before the legislature. We even had a candlelight vigil where we had 200 and some odd nurses come together to demonstrate their commitment to repealing Senate Bill 5.
Have you ever seen any mobilization like this in the past? I mean, I talk to a lot of labor folks, and they're just in awe of what's going on here in Ohio.
It's amazing. It's absolutely electric. I've not seen anything like that.
And as you know, from a labor leader perspective, I mean, this is what you want. You want active, engaged, listening members.
Absolutely, and actually, people who aren't currently organized are coming to, you know, they're coming to us to say, you know, we want these protections too. We didn't realize that we could have a voice in the workplace where, you know, currently they don't.
And that's the next level. I'm hoping out of this spurs that next level of organizing, where you've had the education process, and you said, look what these policemen and these firemen and these nurses and all of these folks have on the job. Instead of saying they don't deserve it, why not ask the question, why can't I have it?
Absolutely. When you take the voice of a worker away, particularly a nurse, and in our case, you know, the morale of the workforce suffers, and for nurses and patients, when morale tanks, so too does patient care.
And that's a scary part of it.
Absolutely.
Because I got to be honest, I think I want my nurse to have the ability to say, this is probably wrong. Can we look at this again without fear of repercussion?
Sure. I mean, these are licensed professionals. We send them to school. They're learned professionals. They're scientists. And to steal their voice from them in determining how their patients best can be cared for, it's just wrong.
Yeah, because I've been asking the question of labor leaders all since we've been here. You know, what is it about collective bargaining that someone who's never going to join a union, never going to be part of a union, why does it matter to them? Why does this fight, what does it mean to, you know, Joe Sixpack, who's never going to be a union member, or my aunt, for instance, it's never going to happen, but agrees with the principles of it?
Sure. For nurses, I guess I would say to them, you know, put yourself in the spot of the patient bed and think about how you want your nurses to have a say in the care that you're receiving.
You know, and that's an excellent point. I mean, there have been a bunch of them, but that one really kind of hits home for me. From today forward, with the nurses and the people that you represent, where do you see this going from here? Let's assume tonight it's an overwhelming victory. What I'm afraid of is that this becomes another campaign that, okay, we won, everybody goes home, and that's the end of it. Where do you see this going?
Sure. Well, we don't want to be in a position where we're constantly reacting. So we want to carry our message forward. We want to continue to push for rights in the workplace. We want to continue to push for, you know, the optimal number of hours for a nurse to spend at the bedside with her patients, and we're going to advocate for that, whether it be at the state house, whether it be at the bargaining table, and whether it be out in the public domain.
All right, Kelly Trotner, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and best of luck tonight.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
As an old country saying puts it, money is like manure. It does no good unless you spread it around. Yet, America's corporate and political leaders have intentionally been shoveling wealth into an ever bigger pile for those at the top. They've gotten away with this by lying to the great majority, which has seen its share of America's prosperity steadily disappearing. Yes, they've told us the rich are getting richer, but that's just the natural workings of the new global economy, in which financial elites are rewarded for their exceptional talents, innovation, and bold risk-taking. Horse duties. The massive redistribution of America's wealth from the many to the few is happening because the rich and their political puppets have rigged the system. Years of subsidized offshoring and downsizing, gutting labor rights, monkey-wrenching the tax code, legalizing financial finagling, dismantling social programs, increasing the political dominance of corporate cash. These and other self-serving acts of the moneyed powers have created the conveyor belt that's moving our wealth from the grassroots to the penthouses. Not since the Gilded Age, which preceded and precipitated the Great Depression, have so few amassed so much of our nation's riches. Having learned nothing from 1929's devastating crash, nor from their own bank failures in 2008 that crushed our economy, the wealthiest of the wealthy fully intend to keep taking more for themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, however, The people are on to their lies. In an October poll, two-thirds of Americans support increased taxes on millionaires, an end to corporate tax subsidies, and policies to more evenly distribute the wealth we all help create. This rising egalitarianism shows the true American character and is changing our politics for the better.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
I work for the state now, helping kids with disabilities. I love the work, hate the rules, the bosses knew would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now that I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. When did I become the problem? How did hope become all mine? The governor says, the tighten the belt, the only one that tightened is mine.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. On Friday, they released the Bureau of Labor Statistic numbers. Overall, the economy is added some 80,000 jobs. And today's quote of the day comes from George Will, who was talking about those 80,000 jobs. And he said, you know, the net number, not so good, but the private sector created 104,000 jobs, and the public sector happily shrank by 24,000. George Will thinks that's a good thing. He says both of that's good. You kind of got to wonder where Mr. Will's head is. So I'm here in Columbus, Ohio at the Firefighters Hall, and an amazing place this is. I'm sitting here with their president, Jack Real. Jack, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You know, I look at something like that quote from George Will, and you got to wonder, what the hell are they thinking?
I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, you know, we've continually shrunk. The public employee jobs have continually shrunk over the years as we, you know, we make our organizations more efficient as budget cuts come about. I know that in my job, I can't operate with fewer firefighters. There's no way.
It's going to put people's lives at risk.
It's going to put not only the public at risk, but the firefighters at risk. I mean, you just can't, you can't win a football game with eight players on the field. And firefighting is a team occupation. You can't fight a fire and rescue people with fewer firefighters on the fire truck, no matter how pretty the fire truck is.
Well, what do you think about going, you know, the conservative view is, well, we can have volunteers. The conservative view is, hey, let's have subscriptions. So if you don't subscribe, your house burns down and we watch. Or like they're trying to do in Georgia, have convicted felons man the firehouses.
I doubt very few of our elected officials would let convicted felons man fire trucks in their community. It might be okay in somebody else's community, but in their community, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
you know, it's ludicrous to believe that you're gonna have volunteers staff a fire truck that takes 4,000 runs a year. It's just not gonna happen. People still have to work, and you know, and if let's get back to where our politicians were volunteers. Maybe that's what we ought to do.
There's a start.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, you know, it's only been 10 years. I mean, September 11th, 2001. I think even the American psyche can remember that back far. I don't think our amnesia is that great. You couldn't find anyone to say a bad word about a fireman or a policeman. But today, now, boy, you guys are greedy and overpaid. And if you remember back in September of 2008, you guys crashed the economy. I'm just kind of scratching my head. How'd we get to this place?
Well, you know, the whole September 11th change over the decade is it's not just, it doesn't just hurt people. It's a shame. It's a shame, and it's truly disappointing that we've allowed politics to get to the point where it's taken, you know, something like September 11th when the firefighters did what they do every day. They go in and rescued people, thousands of people, and gave their lives to do so. And then turn around and no more than 5 or 6 years later start blaming them for an economic collapse that wasn't brought on by firefighters,
it wasn't brought on by the fact that, you know, I live in a $150,000 house and my politicians live in a gated community in a $500,000 mansion. It was brought on by the fact that we allowed Wall Street to control the economic destiny of this country, with greed being the primary factor.
Absolutely. So let's get to this SB 5 fight here in the state of Ohio. How would this affected your members? How would this affect your fellow firefighters if it's allowed to, if it was allowed to stand?
Well, for us, it's a matter of safety. And everybody wants to point to this. This is an emotional issue and things like that. But it is an emotional issue. Firefighters are scared. They're not scared because they're what they're going to take home is less money. They're not scared because they're going to pay more in their pensions or pay more in their health care than they already do. They're scared because they're going to lose the ability to make sure that when they get off that truck at the scene of a fire with people trapped inside, there's nobody behind them. That's what they're scared of. This is a truly a life or death provision for us. Staffing is an important issue. We need to make sure that we have enough staffing to do the job and protect our citizens and each other.
You know, I that's a great point. And I look at I look at this whole scenario, and I got to question the motives behind it. You know, you guys were willing to sit down, and there are Republican mayors across the state of Ohio who have come out and said, "Look, collective bargaining is the answer to most of our problems." The firefighters, police departments, public workers gave major concessions. So I look at this bill and I say, "Well, is this just lazy legislators who just want to be able to steal back? Or is this a very Machiavellian way of getting back at your enemy?"
Well, I think it's more than that. I think it's a strategy. It's you know, we have, through collective bargaining, made sure that our communities can still function. We're not having communities in Ohio go into bankruptcy over collective bargaining results or wages or anything like that. So we've done our part. It has worked for almost 30 years. But I believe this is a strategy to take away your enemy, not just get back at them, to take away your enemy. You know, I've said before, public employees, there are three ways that people can participate in politics in this country. They can vote, they can run for office, and they can give resources, money, to their preferred candidates and issues. Public employees in the state of Ohio can't run for office. Now, as part of Senate Bill 5, they want to take away your ability to give money to your preferred candidates and issues. So basically, they've taken away two-thirds of our voice in politics. They've done that for one reason and one reason only, to make sure that they don't have an enemy running against them. They want to make sure that they continue to operate with the majority of all parts of government in the state of Ohio, and by doing that, they can set the policy for the future and make sure that they can funnel money from the middle class into the wealthiest part of our community and corporations.
And by doing what the two things that you said, the third will be taking your right to vote away. Because if you do away with this, we go back to the good old days that nobody really wants to remember, the whole patronage idea that, you know, tomorrow this party wins and they replace all the firemen and all the policemen and all the public workers with their friends, relatives, and people who worked on their campaigns.
Absolutely. I mean, the reason we have civil service in this country is cronyism. I mean, it was there. You know, you replaced your entire police force with those who supported you. That's the reason we have civil service. Collective bargaining has done nothing but make sure the playing field is equal from start to finish and all types of employment.
Yep. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jack Reel. He is the president of the Columbus Firefighters Local 67 here in Columbus. This is a beautiful building you have here. And thank you for allowing us to come and talk to people while we're here. You know, in looking at this whole situation, you know, the governor came out right away when he was elected, said, you know, either you get on the bus or we're going to run you over. And if you think I'm doing a bad job, stop me. Well, here you guys are organizing, bringing really factions together that had been separated for quite some time. And I think in the state of Ohio that labor needed this to bring them to be one, to really buy into that we are one.
Yeah, oh yeah. This has definitely re-energized all employees and gotten them more active, more interested, and more and participating more in their labor unions. They know what's going on now. I mean, and that's been, I guess, one of the bittersweet components of this is that it's given us a common threat for us to rally around. You know, and you mentioned the governor. He said he's going to listen to Ohio voters. Well, you know, we had thousands of people at the State House rallying against Senate Bill 5 and trying to get their voice heard, and he didn't listen then. We had 1.3 million signatures submitted to put this thing on the ballot. He didn't listen then. If tonight he loses and he doesn't listen then, it may be time for him to get a hearing aid.
Or something.
Yep.
And I remember that, the big rallies you had. In fact, I think it was the Senate Majority Leader that you have there who said, yeah, it's nice that they're out there and they're talking, but we're going ahead with our plans anyway. I guess it just kind of shows. You know, and I go back to what the guy, this Chinese expert on foreign policy came out yesterday and said that the Chinese like the Republicans because they don't listen to the American people. So that's a pretty interesting way of looking at it. Had this really been about good governance? Had SB 5 really been about helping communities, what should they have done? What would have been the right direction?
Well, the first thing, anytime you're going to fix a problem, you sit down with both sides. I mean, that's what collective bargaining is. That's what a good marriage is. You know, you're going to fix something, you sit down with both sides, you communicate, and you come to a resolution that can satisfy both sides' needs. And that's really where we should have started with this. If truly there was a thought that there's a problem with collective bargaining, then the governor, the legislature should have sat down with labor leaders and said, look, how can we make this more evenly fair or the process, how can we fix the problems that we perceive in this process? Financially the same way. This is not saving any community any money. In fact, it's costing them money. You take away the ability to have pension pickup for a community, you're actually costing that community money.
What do you say to the argument? And conservatives have been trying to divide even the firefighters. And I had read a piece in the Plain Dealer here, I think it was day before yesterday, where they said, well, you can't fire a police or a firefighter because they'll file a grievance and it's going to cost us a bunch of money. And if this does happen, well, it's going to be the younger firefighters who lose out. I mean, it's a nice divide and conquer tactic. The idea is to pit, you know, the more senior guys against the younger guys. What do you say to that argument? Because you've made the point from the beginning that this is about staffing. This is about making sure that there's somebody behind you when you walk into that building. What they're trying to say is, well, even if this stays, you're not going to be able to have that.
Oh, I disagree with that. I mean, that's wholeheartedly untrue. I mean, it's the fact of the matter is the seniority issue in public employment, especially in the fire service, which I know the most about, obviously, is an issue that deals with your ability to pick a work location or transfer to a different shift. I mean, that's what we deal with seniority. It's not about who's getting laid off and who's not. I mean, we do have layoffs, but instead of writing a bill about with 300 and some pages in it that mostly talks about how you're going to lay people off, shouldn't we be writing bills in this legislature on how to not have layoffs, how to create jobs? That's what we should be focusing on. We just spent over a year of our time dealing with a bill that had more pages written in it that dealt with layoffs of public employees than the legislature has written in job creation.
Oh, absolutely. And I look at my hometown in Cleveland. Boy, the infrastructure needs major improvements. In my old neighborhood, I mean, the roads needed replacing 20 years ago, and they're in worse shape now than they were then because nothing's been done.
Right.
So let me ask you a last question as we move down the path with this. Most of my friends who have been firefighters have been very conservative-type Republicans. Your membership, how are they taking this? Have you seen any shift in their thought process?
Yeah, curious. I mean, it's I'm about split with my membership. I've got, you know, probably about 42% Republican, probably about 40% Democrat of my membership, and I'm pretty typical of the public employee unions around here in Central Ohio. But they create a lot of Democratic voters. You know, these extreme Republican views have pushed their voters that are public employees away from them. And you can walk downstairs right now and I got a lot of hardcore, very conservative Republican members who are going to go outside and sit at the Ed Schultz show. It takes a heck of a lot to do that. Yeah. And only Governor John Kasich could get that done.
Yeah, he has solidified his opposition.
That's for sure.
And he's done a great job of doing that. Jack Real, I appreciate the time. President of Columbus Firefighters Local 67. Great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com.
saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Blue Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench. And today, we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue PPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can't over the telephone. And it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Ask Me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
You're a proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast. Also, if you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take your class war on the go. Well, more news out of Wisconsin. Turns out that the folks in the assembly there have said, yeah, you can take guns onto the assembly floor. You can take guns into the viewing gallery. No cameras. Sorry, no cameras allowed in the house there. But guns, good. Guns are good. In fact, they have now become the 49th state to allow people to carry concealed weapons. Now what they've done, they've gone even further. Now they have done away with the four-hour requirement, the four-hour training for people to carry a concealed weapon. And, well, I guess maybe mail order now. Maybe somebody showed you which end the bullet comes out of. That's going to be good enough. I don't know. Anyway, some good news coming out of the Senate, if you think, it's a good news. Part of the jobs plan was passed 94-1. It's the part of the bill that repeals the 2006 law passed during the Bush years that required some government agencies to withhold contractor money. They just held 3% back. When they paid their taxes, they got it back. Because what was going on is you had all these contractors who were, doing work over in Afghanistan and Iraq, and surprise, surprise, they weren't paying their taxes. So they passed this law as an incentive to get them to say, hey, well, maybe I should pay that tax. And you've got Republicans and Democrats, bipartisan, saying, you know what, yeah, we're going to give you that 3% back. In fact, the altered bill is expected to pass the House by Friday. So just in time for Veterans Day, they should get this all passed through as part of their big jobs plan. And again, none of the important stuff seemed to get through. It would be nice. It would be a great idea if we started building roads and bridges. In fact, coming here to Columbus, we passed over some bridges that, I guess I got back to praying again. Before you get to the edge of the bridge, please let me make it across. So we'll see how that goes.
Mitt Romney, you know, in bringing this back home here to Ohio, Mitt Romney was talking to a group of folks yesterday at a fabrication plant. That seems like a good place for a Republican presidential candidate, a fabrication plant. But he was there at Guy's Manufacturing where, well, he said, you know, we have to cut back on the scale of the federal government. And for me, that will start by reducing federal employees by 10%. You know, you do that through attrition. You get rid of all those old people. I guess that's the idea. But we're going to raise their Social Security age so that they can't retire. So just basically, I guess, kicking them to the curb, the idea there being. He says, and then something else that is just important, and that's to make sure that the people who work for government don't get better pay and benefits than the people who work in the private sector. And, you know, instead of saying, hey, how do we rise, get everyone to making a decent family-sustaining wage with health care and with pensions, let's tear these folks down. He goes on to say the taxpayers shouldn't have to have money taken out of their paychecks to pay people in government who are our servants and who are making a lot more money than we are. We are. You got to love this guy. Here's a guy worth, what, I think Mitzi's worth about $250 million, throwing himself in with the we. Sorry, you're not in my neighborhood. Sorry, I know you don't see the same struggles that my neighbors and I see. But if you remember back in June, he was the guy who told a group of unemployed people that, hey, you know, I'm there with you. I'm also unemployed. Yeah. I'll take your position over a lot of the other unemployed folks in this country any day. Also, back in September, he claimed he was part of the middle class. I'm not quite sure where he gets this middle class idea from. And here, again, this is a guy made his bones off of what? Well, destroying companies, kicking people to the curb, and putting money in his pocket. More outsourcing. And I go back to my favorite billionaire, Stephen Schatz Piscotty. Made his money the old-fashioned way, outsourcing. But, you know, people are taken to the streets, and this is a good time. I mean, this is a great time for folks to get involved, and we've seen this here in Ohio, a major, massive mobilization of average, everyday folks coming out and knocking on doors and making phone calls and participating and saying, you know what, we're going to turn this bad policy back, we're going to turn this bad law back, and we're going to take this state in the right direction. And you look, Kasich himself said, if I'm going in the wrong direction, let me know, stop me. Well, I think they're stopping him, and they're stopping people across the country. In fact, in Chicago, you saw, I think it was a couple hundred grannies came out. Actually, they're claiming 1,500 grannies took to the streets. The Jane Addams Senior Caucus, they supported the folks there at Occupy Chicago. And you know what? 43 seniors were cited for linking arms to block an intersection near the city's financial district. If you remember that same financial district, you had some smart guy decide, oh, I'm going to go get McDonald's applications and hand them out to the people here. I think if he'd handed me a McDonald's application, I'd probably shoved it where the sun don't shine, but, you know, that would have probably gotten me arrested, you know, much like these 43 senior citizens who have been cited for blocking the intersection. But you didn't see them getting pepper sprayed. Now, that, I think, would have been a sight, because there's part of me that goes, is that what it's going to come to? And you look around the world, some of that stuff has happened. And our friend Jan Schakowsky was out with the people there in Chicago. And we're going to see this kind of uprising. We're going to see, I really believe, after what happens here in Ohio, what happens in Pennsylvania, what happens in Wisconsin, you're going to see this uprising. You're going to see people finally coming together and saying no more. Because there is a verifiable common enemy. When you look at the top 1% in this country and the amount of wealth that they have accumulated, and, you know, I know there's some in the country, I being one of them, very proud of the fact that we have a billionaire class, you know, that enjoys these finer things in life. Now, you know, those 50 million people who live below the poverty line, well, that's just the price of having a billionaire class. Or so they tell us. And for me, it comes back down to trade. And I look at this story the AP just came out with. And yesterday we were here in Columbus, and I missed this. And this is a story I probably have spent a good portion of the night on because, you know, it's right up what I've been saying for the longest time. The AP reported yesterday that China is dumping counterfeit electronic parts into the Pentagon supply chain. Senators Carl Levin and John McCain offered a number of details of the panel's ongoing investigation at the Senate Armed Services Committee. And look, you know, explain to me, because I'm missing it. I'm missing why it is that China is doing anything with our military supply chain. We shouldn't even be getting nuts and bolts from them. I don't even want paper clips. And if you serve in the military, this is kind of scaring the hell out of you. And, you know, we've talked about it in the past. You know, the magnets that make our smart bombs smart? One of the only companies in the world that makes that, the Chinese bought from here in the U.S., boxed it up, took it back, and now we buy those wonderful magnets from where? From the Chinese. And you go through and you look at how we've become one really big, happy supply chain. Whatever happens if we end up in one of those, Cold War scenarios like we were talking about last night? What happens? What happens if you can't build your war machine? What happens if you can't, if you don't have the intellectual technology to do it? We still have the innovation, but what if you don't have the machinists? What if you don't have the die makers? What if you don't have the actual physical hands to do this stuff? It's scary times. And it comes down to our trade deals. It comes down to the fact that we have not minded the store. And we've allowed those greedsters on Wall Street to line their pockets. For what? What did it get us? It got us a supply chain made in China. And lastly, before we take a quick break, evidently, if you remember, the White House said if you come up with an online petition with 5,000 signatures, we'll answer a question. And I guess one of the questions that was asked is, are there aliens? Has ET come to visit? And according to the White House, no, haven't had any contact from ET. Agency France Press reports, in a galaxy far, far away, there is a mathematical chance that alien life exists, but the White House says it has no evidence that extraterrestrials have ever tried to contact humans. So is that a plausible deniability thing? I think George Norrie and Art Bell would have some questions about that. But anyway, here in Columbus, Ohio, we are going to spend the evening talking to folks, bringing you the latest and greatest information. And again, I hope you got out and voted today. And we will be tallying up the results, not just from here in Columbus, Ohio, but also what's going on in Maine and in Mississippi and, of course, back home in Pennsylvania. I hope everyone got out of the vote. We will be right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Most have millions in this country, they not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
There isn't anyone immune from globalization. In fact, the confluence of greed and geography blends seamlessly over all of humanity. As the American workforce has become more sophisticated and smart, corporations have become less agreeable. Of course, there were numerous road signs that led to globalization, and at this point, somewhat improbable that any single cause could be raised from the economic wreckage it has created. However, 1976 may have been a high watermark for the American economy, where a change in the tax code emboldened corporations to move more operations overseas. Where these gutless entrepreneurs once shuttered factories in the Northeast and moved them to southern localities, they were now served up by the U.S. Congress, a world plate, or even to their insatiable greed, the possibilities seem limitless. The assault on American workers continued in the 1980s when the Reagan administration further retooled the tax code to allow foreign investors to set up American subsidiaries, thereby artfully managing the exodus of U.S.-based corporations. The unseemly alliance between Congress and corporations offers little solace to workers, but does shine a perpetual light on the misgivings of unregulated money flowing into the pockets of greedy politicians. Unions, while greatly weakened over the last two decades, continue to mount credible defenses, proposing balance, equity, and fairness for workers over the broader brush of Congress that would have us believe that globalization can regulate itself. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Minute is brought to you by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, go to www.therickSmithShow.com.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I'm really excited about it. I think our folks are excited, and I expect a huge victory.
AFSCME Secretary Treasurer Lee Saunders, who's on the ground in Ohio as Ohio votes on the repeal of the Republican attack on public worker collective bargaining. Saunders says the movement to repeal the collective bargaining attack is crackling with energy.
I've never felt the kind of energy that I'm seeing here. We've been knocking on doors and making phone calls and leafleting at work sites and having rallies and pumping up our folks, and they understand the importance of this vote.
Saunders says that AFSCME, all of labor and allied progressive and community groups, are looking forward to taking this fight back against attacks on working families to Wisconsin and nationwide.
We want to continue the fight, not only in Ohio, but in Wisconsin, and I think this just sends a strong message across the country. When we win this, it's working families, people who are playing by the rules every single day that cannot achieve that American dream, which all of us should be able to achieve, they're willing to make their voices heard, and they're ready to fight back. This is much bigger than this state, and we plan on work to develop the necessary partnerships and coalitions so we can fight back like ever before.
Young is one of the primary adjectives used to describe the Occupy movement as it fights to bring attention to the growing economic inequality of the U.S. Is age the reason Congress doesn't seem to understand what the movement is about? Jesse Russell reports.
While Americans have seen little movement in the average net worth, Congress watched its collective net worth blossom by 25% from 2008 to 2010. Congress as a whole was worth $2 billion in 2010, up from $1.65 billion in 2008. Those numbers were calculated by the website Roll Call. Roll Call also found that 90% of the increase in congressional net worth is concentrated in the 50 richest members of Congress. The median net worth of a Congress member is $912,000. While the wealth gap between the average American family and the people who represent them continues to grow, so has the gap in wealth between households headed by adults under 35 and those 65 and older. According to the Pew Research Center, the median net worth of the younger households was $11,521 in 2008. Now it's $3,662. For the 65 and older set, the median net worth was $120,457 in 1984 and has since grown to $170,494. The center says the housing bust is one of the primary reasons for the severe decline. Older homeowners have benefited by rising equity, while the younger homeowners have been experiencing a market in flux. The center also cites the growing cost of student loans, leaving a heavier burden on the younger generation than ever before. Worth noting, the average age of Congress is 57, with the average age of a senator being 61.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Well, my daddy come on here, how it works when he came home from World War II. Now the yard's just scrapping rubber. He said them big boys did what Hitler couldn't do. Yeah, these mills, they built the tanks and bombs that won this country's war. We sent our sons to Korea and Vietnam. Now we're wondering what they were to die for. Here in Youngstown.
Here in Youngstown. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So as I said earlier, Speaker of the House Boehner said, you know, the top 1% pays 38% of the income tax in America. You know, how much more do you want them to pay? Now, that's what I would expect from Speaker Boehner. I'm sitting here with Congressman Tim Ryan from Ohio's 17th District. So, Congressman, how much more should the wealthy pay?
Well, you know, part of what he's saying is that the percentage is at 38%, in part because no one's working. You know, and people are unemployed or underemployed, so therefore average people are paying less into the federal coffers. But they should definitely pay more. I think a good start would be to at least go back to the Clinton-era level of taxes for the top 1%. There probably should be more brackets created at the top end because the most of the wealth is going to the top 0.1% of the top 1%. So, you know, everyone needs to play along here. They're making billions of dollars a year in that bracket, and
they should contribute to helping rebuild the country.
Right. You look at the CBO number they just came out with. They said what the top 1% saw from 1979 to 2007, a 275% increase in after-tax earnings. Folks in the middle class, they barely kept up with inflation around 40%.
Right. Well, you know, go to Harrisburg, go to Youngstown, Ohio, go to Akron, go to Cleveland, go to Pittsburgh, go to Toledo, you know, go up into Detroit, you know, go over to Milwaukee, you know, go into Indiana and Gary, Indiana. I mean, this is America here that has been hollowed out because of our tariffs and our trade policies and our tax policies. There's been no reinvestment back into the country. And I think part of what you're seeing with this youth movement in the Occupy Wall Street is you have these young kids that did what they were told to do. They go off and get a college education. They come out of school with $30,000 or $40,000 in debt and no real vision for the future of the country because in many instances the Republican Party and the Koch brothers and these people who want to just preserve the system as it is are putting the kibosh on research and development, the green energy revolution, and the kind of things that are going to create opportunity for these young kids. Where's the national vision? It's being brought down by a bunch of powerful interests who just so happen to be in that top 1% or in that top 0.1%.
The ones who are doing really well.
Right.
But there's no national vision. There's no national plan. We rely on invisible things. It's the invisible hand. They'll take care of it.
Yeah, invisible hand, the confidence fairy. You know, if we just cut enough out of the budget that, you know, the economy will get fixed. It hasn't worked here. It hasn't worked in Europe. And we're continuing to be catapulted towards what I think could be dreadful results for the middle class over the next decade, stagnant growth.
You look here in Ohio, bringing it back to the SB5 fight. The reality is, you know, sadly, some of the last middle-class jobs are public sector jobs. And what's happened is you know, where I grew up in Cleveland, all the factories seem to be closed. The infrastructure is deteriorating before our eyes. Mm-hmm. People are looking and saying, well, you've got health care. You've got a pension. I don't. You shouldn't.
Right.
Instead of looking at that a little differently and saying, well, how do I get it?
Right.
To me, that seems to be the rational direction. And it all comes back to me, trade. The fact that we've hollowed out our industrial base, we've deindustrialized cities across this country, and there isn't that middle class, working class job out there anymore.
Right. Well, look, one of the bills I started when I first got to Congress was a bill on the Chinese currency manipulation, thinking, well, we're not going to be able to pass an anti-trade bill or knock down a trade vote, you know, going back to NAFTA and most favored nation trade status and all of these other trade agreements that have come down the pike in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. But what maybe we can do is at least have the Chinese play fair and be able to put tariffs on and countervailing duties and anti-dumping provisions for their currency manipulation. They make their currency artificially cheap, so their products land on our shores cheaper than they would normally be. Long story short, it passed the House of Representatives last year, 350 votes. We had about 99 Republicans that voted for it. This year, in a new Congress, the Senate passed the Chinese currency bill with over 60 votes. The House of Representatives will not even bring it up, knowing that last year 99 of their members voted for a very similar version of the bill, and they're doing it again because of the very, very wealthy people like the system just the way it is, and Speaker Boehner wants to preserve that system.
You know, a guy yesterday, and I forget what his name is. He's a foreign policy expert on Chinese affairs. He came out and said that China prefers Republicans because China knows where they stand. They don't listen to the people. As we're Democrats, they're more apt to listen when we're upset that we're losing millions of jobs.
Yeah.
We're having our industrial base hollowed out. And you know, I don't mind losing a fight, but at least let me be in the fight.
Yeah,
we're giving away our industrial base,
right?
Because we're allowing them to manipulate currency, we're allowing them to steal patents, and we're allowing them to do a lot of the things that's going on, and we're buying it.
Right.
I mean, what's really frustrating is we are funding our own demise.
Right. Yeah. And the globalists like it, you know. I mean, they get the best of both worlds. They get the American consumer to spend the money, and they get to make the product very cheaply over in China. Now, this is not to say that we need to, you know, build walls up around our country. There's always going to be trade, and there may be things that China does that we can't do here or won't do here, or they do it cheaper if there was a level playing field. But the thing is, there's not a level playing field. So let's level the playing field out, see where the chips fall, and then at the same time put together a manufacturing strategy here in the United States.
you know, encompassing how we're going to educate our kids to be able to go work in these factories, how to make investments and incentives to make sure that we are making maybe high-end manufacturing products using advanced manufacturing techniques here in the United States and making that a priority. If you go back, and Kevin Phillips articulates this more than anybody in a lot of his books, American Theocracy and Bad Money and others, where when your economy becomes 20 to 25% of your GDP becomes finance, you are beginning the demise of your country, whether it was the Dutch, the Spaniards, the Brits, and now here we are in America. Again, we were 20 to 25% before the crash in 2008. Now I think we're very close, if not over that percentage again. We're just, it's, you're not making anything. You're not adding value to anything. You're moving money around. It's a Ponzi scheme, these credit default swaps and everything else. And what we have now is the best and brightest of our country going to these jobs on Wall Street because they make a lot more money, because we don't have a manufacturing policy in the United States. And so what happens is these guys, instead of engineering products and engineering the next generation of batteries or cars or windmills or solar panels or whatever, they're engineering and making up and creating financial instruments.
And that's financial schemes.
They end up screwing the whole country in the process.
Yeah, they have done they've done a good job.
They're good. They're talented. Yeah.
If only we could make the next widget or, as you've said, the next battery to fuel the electric car or something.
Right.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Congressman Tim Ryan from Ohio's 17th District. You know, in looking at here in Ohio, this is really right now the front line of the class war. And I know John Boehner and the Republicans, they don't want to talk about that. But the reality is there's been a massive shift in wealth from people who create it to people who sit on their yachts or sit at their poolside. There is a class war going on, and I think Buffett's right. His class is winning.
Yeah, winning, and in some instances have won. I mean, it's going to take a hell of a lot for us to turn this around. That's why SB 5 and the Issue 2 campaign in Ohio here is so exciting, because the only way we do it is if you get average people, working class people, to stick together. And the working class people in Ohio right now are united. And it's anywhere from the mine workers to the auto workers, to the, you know, pile drive and millwrights, to the plumbers and pipe fitters, to the public sector that is obviously more directly affected, all united on this thing. That's the exciting thing. And these guys are watching Fox News and saying, that's a bunch of BS they're sending us. I used to listen to it. I used to believe it. But now they're talking about an issue that I know inside and out, and they're lying. And Sean Hannity went to the State House and sat there with John Kasich, and the police and fire and public employees, many of who voted for John Kasich, were sitting there watching, going, this Hannity and this Fox is just spilling a bunch of, you know, nonsense at us, and we don't believe it anymore. I talked to a guy last night. He said, I don't listen to Rush Limbaugh anymore. I don't listen to Glenn Beck anymore. I don't watch Fox News anymore because I know they're full of crap. And he didn't say crap. And,
that's what has to happen.
And the point I'm making is that's why this movement has staying power, is because people have seen through, you know. It's like when you're dating somebody and they cheat on you. You're in love with them, but then you find out about it. You think something's wrong, but then you find out.
You have that epiphany.
Boom. There's an opening there and an awareness that happens, and that's what's happening here in Ohio. And I think if we play our cards right, if we put a nice agenda together for the working class people based on trade, taxes, and investments back in the United States, research, college education, these things, we will keep that coalition united.
And hopefully we move the Democratic Party back in that direction.
That is my hope.
Sadly, I mean, you talk about trade. Just recently, I'm still scratching my head over the Colombian Free Trade Agreement passing through with 77 senators supporting it. South Korea, 83 senators supported it. More of the same bad policy that got us into some of this mess.
Right, and that's been the problem. There's been no clear line who's on whose side. And I think, you know, in some instances, Democrats at the highest level have always kind of tried to hedge and therefore blurred the lines. And so no one knew where Democrats were standing. And, you know, this income inequality conversation has been going on in smaller pockets around the country for years now,
yep.
Right?
We've been talking about it.
So have I since I got in office, you know, 9 years ago, and in the state Senate before that for 2 years. So in the last decade, I know there's been a group of us talking about it, and we're starting to move in a direction. But what I would have liked to seen is really drawing a line on the sand with the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. Just draw the line in the sand. This issue of inequality is stopping right now. But it didn't, and it got dragged out into this past year.
And here we are still talking about it with no political solution anytime soon to fix it.
And I ask the question, you know, don't Democrats have the same mindset? Because I do believe Republicans have a scorched earth mentality, that if they don't get their way, they're just going scorched earth.
Well, Mitch McConnell said as much. You know, Obama wasn't in for a few months, and Mitch McConnell was saying, you know, our goal is to make this guy a one-termer. Well, now they're doing everything they can to make that happen. But, you know, what happens in the process is you drag down the American economy and you create a lot of suffering for a lot of people in the process so you can advance your own political agenda. I don't mind you advancing your political agenda, but don't hurt the American people in the process. You can have your beliefs and whatnot, but we all know what the solution to this problem is. We got to get people back to work, absolutely, and they're doing everything they can to stop that.
And speaking of knowing people's political ideas, I'd like to know who's spending money on campaigns like Building a Better Ohio or Americans for Prosperity or Americans for Dogs and Puppies or whatever euphemistic name they come up with,
right,
which means doing something with Citizens United.
Right. Well, I mean, we got to get to the point where the campaign finance system is completely trashed at this point. I mean, it's gotten so blatant. And that's another thing, back to the point about Fox News. These folks in the coalition for issue two here are watching who's donating money into these campaigns. They know it's Karl Rove. They know it's Lynn Cheney. They know it's these other outside groups that are coming in, Citizens United and others. And so next year, when these same groups are running ads on behalf of Mitt Romney or Herman Cain or whoever their nominee is, these folks here are going to see that. And they're going to know where the money's coming from. And those are the same guys that weren't on their team this year. So they're going to remember.
That's the hope. Congressman Ryan, it was great talking to you. I appreciate you coming
on. You
got it,
man. Take care. Thanks for being in Columbus.
All righty. Going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Another world. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. What are you today? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
As an old country saying puts it, money is like manure. It does no good unless you spread it around. Yet, America's corporate and political leaders have intentionally been shoveling wealth into an ever bigger pile for those at the top. They've gotten away with this by lying to the great majority, which has seen its share of America's prosperity steadily disappearing. Yes, they've told us the rich are getting richer, but that's just the natural workings of the new global economy in which financial elites are rewarded for their exceptional talents, innovation, and bold risk-taking. Horse duties. The massive redistribution of America's wealth from the many to the few is happening because the rich and their political puppets have rigged the system. Years of subsidized offshoring and downsizing, gutting labor rights, monkey-wrenching the tax code, legalizing financial finagling, dismantling social programs, increasing the political dominance of corporate cash. These and other self-serving acts of the moneyed powers have created the conveyor belt that's moving our wealth from the grassroots to the penthouses. Not since the Gilded Age, which preceded and precipitated the Great Depression, have so few amassed so much of our nation's riches. Having learned nothing from 1929's devastating crash, nor from their own bank failures in 2008 that crushed our economy, the wealthiest of the wealthy fully intend to keep taking more for themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, however, the people are on to their lies. In an October poll, 2/3 of Americans support increased taxes on millionaires, an end to corporate tax subsidies, and policies to more evenly distribute the wealth we all help create. This rising egalitarianism shows the true American character and is changing our politics for the better.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a living. Rich and poverty. Father Sharp left a cameo. Blue dental had his vein. Oh, he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. We are here in Columbus, Ohio, at the Ohio AFL-CIO headquarters. It is election day, hoping this goes the right way. But the question then becomes, once this victory happens today, where do we go from here? I've got Frank Hurt, president of the BCTGM, here talking to us. Frank, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
You know, I look at the mobilization that's gone into this, all of the work, all of the organizing. It has been really a remarkable endeavor.
Yes, it has, and it really needed to be, because I think everybody in this state seen what that we're a part of a group of governors, Republican governors, who have decided that they're going to go after the labor movement throughout this country. And they have to be stopped. And if we stop them here today, that'll have a great effect, I think, on the rest of the country. And show working people, that we, as a group of people fighting for our standard of living, can mobilize and be successful.
You know, as an international president who represents members all across the country, why is Ohio so important to your members?
Well, Ohio is very important because if the Republicans win in Ohio, then they go to Florida and Wisconsin, New Jersey, and throughout the country. It will energize the Republicans if they win here today.
How much of this what's going on here in Ohio do you think is centralized? You know, I've made the argument that all of these really bad pieces of legislation that have come out are part of a grand scheme, if you will. Not to be conspiratorial, but it seems to play that a lot of the legislation we're seeing has a lot of the same components, and in fact, a lot of it the exact same wording. So I've made the argument this is coming out of the think tanks, this is coming out of the Koch brothers, you know, little closet world.
Well, if you recall, a few years ago, Hillary Clinton talked about the right-wing conspiracy. You know what? She knew what she was talking about. Yep. She was right. It's now been proven that Hillary knew what she was talking about, because this is a great right-wing conspiracy funded by the Koch brothers and a lot of other of the ultra-rich in this country who cannot stand to see the labor movement continue and to be a roadblock to their profitability.
Yeah, I mean,
They are just so selfish that they can't stand themselves, and they have to continue to take away from working people. It seems like it's almost a game to them. They have all the money that they could ever think about using.
Do you sometimes think it's not about money?
Sometimes I think it's a game with them. They want to see who can win the game.
Yeah. It's not about. I don't think it's about money. It's about power.
It's about
who can we manipulate and who can we control?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hear someone like John Boehner saying, well, it's not class warfare, and the top 1%, they pay 38% of the taxes. How much more should they pay? I guess the question is, you know, how much is enough?
Well, class warfare is a good way for John Boehner to put it, because it is class warfare, and they declared it on working people a long time ago, and they continue to fight every battle with every governor that they can buy.
What do you say to the person who says this SB5 fight, or this issue number two, wanting to be repealed, is solely a union issue? How would you explain to someone who's probably never going to be a member of a union? I think of my aunt who's never been a union member. Supports the ideas, but how do you explain to someone that it's important that this is repealed for them as well?
Well, you know, the Republicans' argument in this case is that public employees make more money than private sector employees, which is not true.
Well, in fact, Building a Better Ohio said 43% more.
Well, such a lie. Such an outrageous, outright lie. But all those people who are not union members in this state are just going to be affected just as much as public sector workers. My members are not public sector workers, but they will be affected, because then the employers come to the table and say, well, the public employees gave up their pensions or part of their pension. They're paying more, so why shouldn't you? They're paying more for their health insurance, so why shouldn't you? You think you're better than public employees? This is pitting worker against worker. Absolutely. Whether it's union or not.
Yeah, I mean, the wealth class has always been very good at dividing, slicing and dicing the working class up. And I go back to Jay Gould, the railroad magnate from the 1880s, 1890s, who said, I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And maybe we're not killing each other now, but they're doing a very nice job of dividing us. Your union, non-union, white-collar, blue-collar, black, white, whatever. They've got all kind of subcategories for us.
Well, you know, one of the worst things that has happened to this country is that Rupert Murdoch came to this country. Rupert Murdoch came to this country, and he now controls the thought process of millions of workers, because when people watch Fox News and all the ilk that he has on there, lying day in and day out, trying to manipulate the minds of working people, and they don't watch and they don't ever hear the other side, they are manipulated by that group of people, and it's been very, very effective. We have to find a way to get the truth to all workers, not just union workers, but all workers in this country. Well, I wish they would start watching MSNBC instead of Fox myself.
I don't mind people watching Fox. I wish there were more alternatives. And I don't know that I would blame Rupert Murdoch. He's playing by the rules that we've allowed to be set. I would blame Bill Clinton for the telecom bill of 96 that allowed consolidation of media so where someone like Murdoch could own a television station, a newspaper, and a bunch of radio stations in the same market.
You're absolutely right. They were allowed to do it, and we have to repeal that law.
You know, when 80% of everything we see, hear, and read is owned by five multinational corporations, we definitely have a problem, and not just consumers, as a democracy.
As a democracy. They are killing this democracy by by pitting worker against worker, and the rich against the poor, and the poor against the rich. And by the way, the rich are enhancing the group of poor, so they better be careful about that, because one day when people get so hungry, they have to find food for their family some way or somehow.
One way or another, it's going to happen.
Some way or somehow, they're going to find food for their kids. And for that group of people to be allowed to continue to spew the lies that they do and to manipulate the minds of working people in this country is outrageous.
I think you're seeing some of that. I think you're seeing people taking to the streets. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Frank Hurt, president of the BCTGM. You know, what you're looking at across the country, and I don't know if you've been up to any of the Occupies, but you're seeing tens of thousands of people in the streets talking about things that I think labor's been talking about for at least a generation. The inequality, the wealth gap, the fact that government seems to be working for big corporations and not for people like you and me. And I think this is an exciting time, and you couple that with what's going on here in Columbus and across Ohio. It could be that populist uprising that people have been looking for.
Maybe the time has come when enough people in this country has realized exactly what's happening to them. When we have thousands upon thousands of college graduates coming out of school every year unable to find a job that pays more than the minimum wage, that is not a good situation. That is a terrible legacy for us to leave to our kids, and we have to do something about it. And I think the kids are doing something about it. All the Occupy Wall Streeters and Occupy every place in the country I encourage them to keep on doing it, and I'm going to join them. And I know people on Wall Street who agree with them. I know people on Wall Street that I've known for years who say, if I could go outside and be with them, I would, because we know how selfish these companies are.
Well, don't you think on some level the people on Wall Street have to look around and go, this isn't sustainable? At some point, what we're doing to the most wealthy economy in the history of the world, not sustainable, and eventually it all comes crumbling down?
I've been told by a couple of them that it's not sustainable, that they cannot continue to do what they're doing, and our system has to change in order to try to get some of the wherewithal within this country in the hands of working people, so they can once again start thinking about buying a house or buying a car or sending their kids to college. Not only college, but some of them can't even afford to send them to a high school these days.
Yeah. And when you look at the latest census numbers just came out, the gap between seniors and young folks, it just came out yesterday. A senior citizen has 47 times more the wealth than someone under 35.
I've seen
that is the largest gap in the history of them keeping this statistic. And we are just growing further and further apart. And what concerns me is I heard Jeb Bush's son, Prescott, they seem to like to recycle the same names. But he said that his generation is more likely to see a UFO than a Social Security check. And when I see that kind of number, I go, this is exactly what the wealth class is going to use to separate young and old.
Well, you know, from what I know, Social Security, if it had been left alone, would have been a self-sustaining program.
Had we not stolen from it.
Yeah, we stole the money. The politicians stole the money from Social Security. Now they have to give it back. They've got to give the money back to Social Security from where they stole it so we can keep those people that think they're not going to get Social Security when they get older, so it will be there for them. And it's easy. It's easy. All they have to do is give them the money back. Stop spending all the money on wars and unnecessarily
and
wars.
And tax cuts for people who don't.
You know, it's amazing to me. The Republican caused this problem, and they exasperate it by standing in the way of every piece of legislation that the president wants to get passed, and then they blame the Democrats. Unbelievable! It's unbelievable how the Republicans can operate in this country, and we have a lot of working people who believe them.
And that's why we need to somehow gain a microphone as powerful as theirs, because they do control a good portion of the media. You know, and looking at all of this stuff and looking going forward, the messaging that's come out of here in Ohio, the messaging out of Occupy Wall Street, what's labor doing to bring people together to, you know, maybe not co-opt, but help push this? Because as I've said, you know, the occupation movement across the country, they've been talking about things I think labor's been talking about for over a generation. It's now that there's an opportunity, there's a platform, there's all of this organizing going in. Where do you see this going forward?
Well, I see it continuing. I see the labor movement assisting them, but not taking over that movement, because the labor movement cannot take over the popular movement like that, and should not.
Right.
But we should be and will be as supportive as we can possibly be in every part of this country in order to help those people realize that they are on the right track. And what they're doing is making everybody in this country realize there is something bad wrong in this country. We have too many people who go home at night and sit back and watch television and not even read the newspaper. They don't even know what's going on in the world. But we have got to get the word to them. They have got to start understanding that every single person that works for a living in this country is a very, very important cog and a very important a part of correcting the inadequacies that we have in this country.
Last question I've got for you, you know, as we're going forward with all of this, I've said, and maybe you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think this was as painful as this whole process has been, as these attacks have been, I think now is probably the best time for that to happen. I worry that, you know, 3-4 years down the line, maybe they dwindled labor, dwindled away the membership, dwindled away. This attack now, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but you can correct me, this brought some of the people back together. This kind of reunited solidarity brought people back to their union who may have voted for Republicans in the past, may have been I was a Teamster for years. We used to call those folks Meesters. Now they see the self-interest, now they come back to the fold.
And you know what? It's the same way with the police. It's the same way with the firemen. You know, I know policemen in this town who've never voted for a Democrat in their life, who are good friends of mine, if you can call a Republican a good friend, and who have sworn to me that they'll never ever vote for a Republican again because they can't trust them. And as far as everybody coming together and realizing, you know, I have 1,300. Sugar workers in Minnesota and North Dakota that's been locked out of their jobs for about 3 months, and it's because of the greed of the employer who makes profit hand over foot, but want absolute control over the workplace and of the people who work for them, and so they locked them out, and they
brought scabs in to replace them,
It was they planned for that for 2 years. So this don't happen overnight. They brought scabs into replacement, and that scab company is there. It's in place, and it's prepared to go and work for any company that calls upon it. That is a real blight upon this country, where a company can be very profitable by providing scabs to other employers in order to beat the union out of their shop. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Exactly.
Frank Hurt, I appreciate your time. We'd love to have you come back again and talk to us real soon.
Anytime.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Man, brother firefighters, my friend. And the kids locked in the Capitol are fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line, this is a union town, a union town. All down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town. All down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we bear.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
Walker is Mubarak, Madison, Cairo, fascism track, next stop Ohio. Trying to kill labor, that's their jihad, huh? What's gonna happen when the people all rise up? Sad thing is, so we all labor. What you expect to hear? Billionaires on the papers.
Mr. President, you're wrong. This is a national issue.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, thericksmithshow.com, here in Columbus, Ohio, at the AFL-CIO building here in Columbus. I'm sitting here with John Nichols of the Nation, the John Nichols. John, great seeing you again.
It's great to see you. I remember you in one of the assembly hearing rooms at the Capitol in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we were the only radio program to be broadcasting out of the Capitol, live and out.
It was one of those remarkable moments where, you know, when you walk in there and you see a whole radio show set up in an assembly hearing room, you realize that perhaps the politicians aren't in charge anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty remarkable. I mean, you're absolutely right. It was remarkable that not only were the politicians not in charge, the police really weren't in charge either.
Well, no, I would say that this is a bit of subtlety there. I think the police were in charge, and they were doing their job. They're supposed to protect civil liberties, free speech, dissent, and they were making it work very well.
And I didn't get hit with any tear gas cannons.
No, you did not.
In fact, you know, I had our whole setup. We were coming through the revolving door, and they applauded when I got it all through.
Well, this is a funny thing. And this is it's something we have had such dysfunctional relations between labor and the police often over the years that sometimes we forget that police officers, state patrol officers, Capitol cops, these are blue-collar trade unionists. They are members of unions. They are getting hit as hard as anybody else. And at the end of the day, they will do their job. But it's important for us to define out that a part of their job is to make sure that people can dissent. They swear an oath to defend the Constitution. Even if a Governor Walker or a Governor Kasich doesn't respect that, it's important for us to back the cops up when they do, in a way, get between those politicians who want a palace guard and the people who need security.
Excellent point. Yeah. You know, you look at Albany, New York, where the governor wanted to get those people, you know, the encampment there in Albany thrown out. The police said, no, we're gonna make sure that they're watched, make sure they're gonna be safe, but we're not busting heads.
I think that's a big part of what's happened over the last the last year or so, and it's really one of the big transitions, is police, fire, prison guards, folks who are trade unionists and they respect their union, but they've thought that they were somehow able to survive even the toughest kind of economic downturns, because you'd always need a cop,
right.
You always need a prison guard. Now they've realized that they're in the target too, and that's an important thing. We've seen amazing solidarity occur all over the country. I'll give you a good example here in Ohio that's just kind of blown my mind. The American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, they are in no way affected by this Ohio law. They represent federal workers,
sure.
Right? And yet they are in massively. They put 11 staff in because they got a lot of workers up in Dayton and at the airports, TSA folks. And the top AFGE people are out at the airports today on the hourly shift times to meet with workers and tell them get out and vote on this, because this is a union solidarity moment, and if Ohio wins, ultimately federal workers win as well. That's where people, that's so different than where we were at 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea that we're all in the fish tank.
Yeah.
And while the other guy may be the flavor this week, eventually we're going to be in the last one in the fish tank. And, you know, you bring that up, and I think back to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
The firefighters, they were excluded.
They're exempt. Yeah.
So were the police.
Yep.
But yet, one of the guys we talked to kind of often, Malin Mitchell,
yeah.
One of the firefighters who, you know, said, no, we're going to stand with these workers, and we're gonna throw into it.
Yeah, it's a remarkable moment in Wisconsin. It was in the second or third day of the fight, and John Matthews, who's the president of the very militant teachers union in Madison, terrific trade unionist, has his office next door, right, same building as the local firefighters union, local 311, and Joe Conway Jr., who's the head of the Madison firefighters, walked down the hall and said, you know, I don't want to be in a fight with you guys. That's not right. And it was kind of at that moment, we're just very human level, two guys just said, we're not going to let this happen. We're not going to let anybody divide us. And Malin and other people stepped up. And I was there. I think you probably were that day when the firefighters first appeared.
Yep, when they walked in
through the crowd.
It was incredible.
Yeah,
it was,
and we're seeing a lot of that here. I am powerfully struck here in Ohio. Different kind of movement, right? It didn't have quite the numbers at right. some of those rallies. But the spirit of it, what I'm seeing on the streets and the character of it here is really impressive. And much like Wisconsin, it's down into the small towns. I was out in, you know, around the state, and I'm blown away by, in, you know, towns of 2,000 people. There's folks who've got their signs up. They're out knocking doors. And this is where labor needed to be.
Absolutely.
This is what it needs to do. And the great historic struggle for organized labor in the modern, in post-war era, was Ohio 1958. That was the right-to-work law vote. They were trying to do a right-to-work law in Ohio. If they had passed it, that would have just destroyed industrial unionism in the North. It was their big breakthrough moment. The National Association of Manufacturers, everybody was in. They thought they could win Ohio because Ohio had a very strong CIO and a very strong AFL. And they did not like each other. They had fought each other over the years. The assumption was they could not come together. Well, the interesting historical fact is the Ohio AFL-CIO, as one unit, was formed in 1958. It was in a moment of attack
Absolutely.
That people came together and built a movement that was muscular enough not just to beat that referendum on right to work, but to make Ohio what it was for the better part of 30, 40 years, really thought of as a labor state. I think this referendum fight, what's going on right now, is the same sort of transformational moment. People coming together, recognizing they have to fight, getting down into the grassroots, no longer that bureaucratic thing, the really passionate deal. If it plays out right, you know, I think from Ohio we start to see
something. You see a rebirth.
Really do. And, yep. and
because of the educational process. And I, you know, from a tactical position, mm-hmm. I think the right made a huge mistake.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could have let labor just dwindle until it goes away.
Slow cuts would have been the answer. Slow cuts was the right answer.
And this attack brought people who are union members who never thought of it, hey, it's a job, yeah, it's now brought them into the fold saying, hey, look, mm-hmm. they're attacking me and my family.
We have to, and one of the things is we have to remain, you got to kind of hold that in and hold that tight, be very conscious of it, because I guarantee you what's going to happen. They're going to come back with the slow cuts
of course.
Here in Ohio. And, you know, my assumption is that that this law gets beat. Now, I think we have to be careful about assumptions, especially with off-year referendums. But then the question is how big it gets beat. If it gets beat very big, then you're going to start to see slippage within the Republican caucus. You're going to see those old kind of union town Republicans, and there are some, who are going to get very careful about getting too close to Kasich on anything. On the other hand, a narrow shift, that's one where you'll see the Republicans hold their caucus together and start nickel and diming. We're in tenuous times, brother. It's going to be a couple years of this kind of fighting. But if we make it through, you know, if we can just kind of keep our head above water, keep kicking, I think it's not just rebirth of labor. It's a new labor movement that's very, very different. It's a labor movement that in some ways relates more to what the labor movement was. You know, we always go back to the 30s as a reference point. I would go back to the teens and the 20s, a very militant labor union movement that knows what it's fighting for, is under attack, but builds this kind of lifetime solidarity where people know they're union members for their whole life, and even if they're not in. We get that out of this. You'll be doing radio for the rest of your life.
Well, beyond that, I hope for the working people because this is how we bring a middle class back about in this country. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with John Nichols of the Nation, and you said, you know, if you have a big win, it's going to hopefully be that beginning of the rebirth. But I'm saying the first thing that's going to happen is maybe Pennsylvania doesn't have to fight this fight.
Yeah,
because there are four bills in the Pennsylvania legislature doing a lot of the same things that this does, and in other states. In this area, Indiana being another one.
Well, Indiana's already a bad scene there.
But if you have a big,
it could get worse. Yeah.
If you have a big victory here, maybe you push that down a little bit.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And one of the things that we, when you're in a popular movement, it's a populist thing, you don't always presume that power, that those at the top are paying attention to you. And we always say it, but we don't really necessarily believe it. One of the things that has been absolutely confirmed by this year of struggle is that these Republican governors watch this stuff like hawks. They are deeply engaged with what is happening at the state level in other states. And so, to give you an example, Wisconsin puts 50,000 people out that first Friday of the struggle, right? That's 1 week in, 50,000 people out. We hear from Michigan, Rick Schneider says, oh, we're not going to go after collective bargaining. Now, Rick Schneider went after other stuff. He's a bad player. But they didn't go after collective bargaining. Similarly, Wisconsin recalls two Republican state senators. The next day, John Kasich says to the unions, well, do you want to negotiate
something? Let's talk now.
Yeah. And so it's absolutely clear that they watch from state to state. They watch what happens. What Ohio does with this referendum is going to be the number one subject for Republican governors across the country, and maybe, frankly, for a couple of Democratic governors. And they're going to look at that and say, oh, okay, we get it. If the people have any ability to turn this stuff back, we better be careful where we trot. That's important.
Yep.
The other one that's important, keep an eye today, because it really is a labor-based struggle, although it's seen differently. The Maine vote on their voter ID law. Same kind of thing as here. 70,000 Mainers signed petitions to force a referendum to protect their same-day registration.
Which I wish we had across the country.
Oh, yeah. So it's a critical to mobilizing low-income people, people who aren't as engaged in politics, getting to the polls on Election Day, getting registered, getting to vote. They eliminated that in Maine to shift the politics there. People put that back on the ballot. It's a pushback. Organized labor is very, very engaged up there. A win in Ohio, a win in Maine on that issue. A sweeping of Kentucky, where it looks like Democrats in a state that voted for McCain that sent Rand Paul to the U.S. Senate last year. If Democrats do very, very well in Kentucky, not because they're the greatest people. I'm not trying to pitch them as great populists. But that's a real signal that something shifted. And what's fascinating to me, speaking of these governors watching from state to state, is in West Virginia, where they had the special election for governor in October, on the night before the election, the governor of West Virginia, a Democrat, got up in front of a huge crowd and said, you got to go out and work your fingers to the bone. You got to work your tails off tomorrow. Because if you don't, we're going to be in a Wisconsin situation, right? In San Francisco, in the mayoral race, there's a guy who's talked a little bit about privatization. One of his opponents got an ad up with a picture of the guy and Scott Walker.
Nice.
You know, so what I'm saying is we have nationalized these state fights in a way so that now it becomes a reference point. People say, yeah, I mean, you got to fight. You got to work here or we're going to end up like Wisconsin. We're going to end up like Ohio. If we can keep that going, keep building that out, we have the potential to really transform politics all over this country because people know what the fight is about. It's not a gray area. It's like, oh, my gosh, these guys win election. We start to lose not just some pay, not just some benefits. We lose our union. We lose our right to organize. And
we lose our entire middle class.
Well, that's, you know, our middle class is shaky anyway. But I also think it transforms the presidential politics.
You know,
right.
One of the things, you know, last line of questioning, you know, sure. One of the things that is most exciting to me about this and about what's going on with the occupations around the country is that we're actually face-to-face talking to people.
Yeah.
We're actually conversing, and somebody is listening. I mean, mm-hmm. It's one thing to have someone being a blowhard and just out there spewing. It's another thing actually having dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
How the conversation has changed from, you know, the shiny thing in the room to wealth inequality to Wall Street being unrestrained to, you know, we've got 50 million people living in poverty. I think that's remarkable.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, that's that conversation that causes people at the top
to get worried.
Well, I would say on the other side, but people at the top, even on the progressive side, to do an interesting thing. Because I'll tell you this, you're leading labor leaders, you're leading progressive politicians, when they're in a room quietly, they're very radical. They're actually quite militant. But then they think, I don't know if the people out there, I know what I believe. I've read these books.
They got their finger in the wind.
Yeah, I don't know. When they talk to each other, they find out the people are just as radical. And then suddenly you see a transformation in the way that folks talk. And so they, old slogans, I will guarantee you, that the better part of a decade went by without any major labor leader putting his fist in the air and saying an injury to one is an injury to all. Right?
Good point.
Now they all do.
Yep.
Right? Because they recognize, not because they didn't believe it in their heart, but because now they recognize there's a base out there. And that's maybe the biggest, you may hit on the biggest transformation that has occurred, which is leadership of labor progressive forces around this country actually now believe they've got a base of people that share values, share ideals. And when you do that, the messaging gets so much better. Instead of just drab, boring slogans, you know, that really mean nothing. Now we get pretty militant messages. That gets people excited. Because if I'm going to, let's say you're a single mom, right? You got two kids, you know, you two jobs, not just barely getting by. What's going to make you go out and, you know, carve 3 hours out of your night, go knock on doors, or, you know, go and do some campaign to do anything political? You're not going to do it for soft messaging, right, for an empty campaign. You're going to do it because you think it's life and death struggle, that this is central to what you're about.
Which is why I think 2008, you did see so many people coming out. They really thought that was going to be the answer.
There they didn't think they were against the wall. They actually thought they could transform in a positive way. Unfortunately, now we're in a different place where we now realize we're against the wall. We're fighting for stuff. But that ultimately, I hate to say it, I think the struggle where you're in the corner is usually the struggle where you get in long-term and
Absolutely.
Fight harder.
Yep.
Here's the thing, though. You do have to have victories along the way. You can't ask people to be the French Resistance forever, right? And so when you're in these struggles, you have to have wins. The Wisconsin recalls were good. This Ohio thing has the potential to be dramatic. And then you turn right back to Wisconsin. The recall there starts November 15th, a week from Tuesday. And that, I can tell you, I've seen it on the ground. It blows my mind. There are already 20 offices open across the state. More than 8,000 people have been trained to pass petitions. More than 200,000 have signed up to do so. You're going to see a mobilization that will be very similar to what you saw here in Ohio. And that's what needs to happen. It has to be state after state after state across this country.
And bringing people back together.
And maybe. In 2012, we don't end up with a President Mitt Romney, but we end up with a different Barack Obama. And that's an important thing.
A different one. And they go back to FDR, who said, you know, you want all these things? Get out there and make me do it.
That's what's happening. But then there's another element, too. FDR was always confident saying to Wall Street, I welcome their hatred. That was an important thing. He actually said, I welcome their hatred. Barack Obama, who I think is a good man, covered him in a lot since 1996, I've covered him. But I think that he came up into politics believing that you could work with these people. What this year is proving is, no, you got to pick a side. It's that old Florence Reese said it right best with her song, Which Side Are You On?
Yeah, John Nichols, great talking with you. I look forward to seeing you back in Wisconsin, because when the recall happens, we plan on being
We'll set you up in the Assembly hearing chamber.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. John Thanks, Nichols brother. From The Nation. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Desperate measures we explore, marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out,
Where's our government?
Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided into their lovers for their haters. Brought billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have broken through a cap.
But we never give up.
We'll be here one day longer. The people's voice is stronger.
The people's voice is stronger.
We work hard for our money. We will talk with respect. Keep fighting for these rights, the generations that's next. One day longer.
One day longer.
The people's voice is stronger.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I'm really excited about it. I think our folks are excited, and I expect a huge victory.
AFSCME Secretary Treasurer Lee Saunders is on the ground in Ohio as Ohio votes on the repeal of the Republican attack on public worker collective bargaining. Saunders says the movement to repeal the collective bargaining attack is crackling with energy.
I've never felt the kind of energy that I'm seeing here. We've been knocking on doors and making phone calls and visiting at work sites and having rallies and pumping up our folks, and they understand the importance of this vote.
Saunders says at AFSCME, all of labor and allied progressive and community groups are looking forward to taking this fight back against attacks on working families to Wisconsin and nationwide.
We want to continue the fight, not only in Ohio, but in Wisconsin, and I think this just sends a strong message across the country. When we win this, it's working families, people who are playing by the rules every single day, but cannot achieve that American dream, which all of us should be able to achieve. They're willing to make their voices heard, and they're ready to fight back. This is much bigger than this state, and we plan on work to develop the necessary partnerships and coalitions so we can fight back like ever before.
Young is one of the primary adjectives used to describe the Occupy movement as it fights to bring attention to the growing economic inequality of the U.S. Is age the reason Congress doesn't seem to understand what the movement is about? Jesse Russell reports.
While Americans have seen little movement in the average net worth, Congress watched its collective net worth blossom by 25% from 2008 to 2010. Congress as a whole was worth $2 billion in 2010, up from $1.65 billion in 2008. Those numbers were calculated by the website Roll Call. Roll Call also found that 90% of the increase in congressional net worth is concentrated in the 50 richest members of Congress. The median net worth of a Congress member is $912,000. While the wealth gap between the average American family and the people who represent them continues to grow, so has the gap in wealth between households headed by adults under 35 and those 65 and older. According to the Pew Research Center, the median net worth of the younger households was $11,521 in 2008. Now it's $3,662. For the 65 and older set, the median net worth was $120,457 in 1984 and has since grown to $170,494. The center says the housing bust is one of the primary reasons for the severe decline. Older homeowners have benefited by rising equity, while the younger homeowners have been experiencing a market in flux. The center also cites the growing cost of student loans, leaving a heavier burden on the younger generation than ever before. Worth noting, the average age of Congress is 57, with the average age of a senator being 61.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com, here in Columbus, Ohio, for the big SB5 fight. Issue number 2 going down, and like I said earlier, a steaming pile of number 2, this piece of legislation. I'm sitting here with Brian Dempsey, Secretary Treasurer of the Florida AFL-CIO. Brian, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, thank you for having us here.
You're a long way from home.
Well, you know, wherever the fight is, that's where we want to be.
Why? Why is Ohio important to Florida?
Well, your governor is very similar to ours. He does not like the working family. He's trying to take everything he possibly can from the working family. And everything that is wrong in this economy, they're putting on the backs of workers. And that's something that we can't sit to the sideline and watch happen.
Yeah, you know, you look at the job numbers that came out last Friday. 108, I think it was 104,000 private sector jobs were created. But we lost 24,000 public sector jobs. And over the last several months, we've lost hundreds of thousands of public sector jobs. And somehow they're trying to tell me that by kicking all these people to the curb and pulling all this money out of the economy, somehow it's going to grow the economy. I haven't figured out how, by firing people, putting them on unemployment, that's going to grow our economy.
Well, they haven't figured it out either. But what they're doing is they're putting this smokescreen out there, and basically they're just trying to go after the working family. Everything that has been put forward at this point is an organized plan to just strip away the rights of workers. The plan is to try to confuse them to think that if you keep giving, because America, we believe in sacrifice to do the right thing.
Sure, shared sacrifice, we're all in.
Right. So what they're doing, they're taking advantage of that philosophy. And they're taking away from the working people, and they're confusing people and trying to get them to think that your sacrifice or the sacrifice of your neighbor or the sacrifice of someone else is going to make this economy better. Not going to the root cause. The root cause is tax credits and tax cuts to the rich and not bringing jobs back to this country. Outsourcing jobs.
Absolutely.
If you want to increase our tax base, bring jobs back. Because when a person works, they pay taxes.
Absolutely.
And that's a very simple.
You know, all the T-twits that are Tea Party people, I'm not sure where you're at on that. But all the T-twits, they run around screaming about the debt and our huge deficits. And I say, I'm not so much worried about that. Mm-hmm. What I'm worried about is our trade deficit. The last mm-hmm. time this country saw a trade surplus, mm-hmm. 1975. I don't know how long you can run the largest economy. I don't know how long you can be the superpower having a trade deficit for most people's lives.
Well, I think we're seeing the end of it. I think what we've seen is that all the things that we've built up over the years and all the things that America had accumulated because we were a working society. We were people who wanted to work and there was work for us. We built this nation and now we see the slow destruction of this nation in the fact that the workers are not part of the solution. All the pain is being put on the workers' back.
Yep.
Now, if you put the workers to work, then you will see that communities will thrive again. You will see that we will have a country that's strong again. But that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is giving it to the 1%.
What do you say to the lieutenant governor of Tennessee who recently came out and said, well, unemployment is now a way of life, and we need to kick those people off because it's become this way of life?
I say you create the problem, and then you blame the victim for the problem. That's what I would say to them. Like I said, the whole point is to misdirect. They misdirect the issue. If you take and you give people jobs, they will work. People want to work. It's true. There may be a small majority that have never worked before, and there may be a generation or two that may have not worked before. But by and large, Americans want to work. They feel a sense of ownership.
Absolutely.
When they work. They feel that they're part of the American fabric and fiber when they work. But when you deny them that opportunity to work by outsourcing their jobs and by taking the thing that make them most important, and that is part of the community, part of building their community, then what do you end up with? You end up with people who are not connected. And that is created at the top by taking jobs away.
Now, you know, you talk about the family values people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's a greater family value than making sure that people have jobs, because there is a therapeutic quality to a day's work. There is some there's dignity and self-respect that permeates through the family as well.
You provide a family with a job. That father, he works. He has a son that sees him work. He grows up to be a worker. You have a mother that works. That daughter grows up to be a worker. So what we have is a situation where the children would emulate the parents. Now, when you take that job away from them by outsourcing that job, sending that job to another country, what are you causing? You're causing this vacuum.
Yep.
You're causing a ripple effect. And now what do you want to do? You want to blame the people who can't find
yes.
a job because the job's out there?
That's the goal. We're going to blame the victim because, you know, we can't blame the real problem, which mm-hmm. is we've got a very small percentage of people in this country who are living extraordinarily well.
at the behest of the rest of us. And I got to tell you, I'm very proud of the fact as an American that my sacrifice has created a billionaire class larger than anywhere else in the world. In fact, I've got a favorite billionaire. And I think every American should have a favorite billionaire. Mine is number 352, a guy named Schatz Piscotti. He made his money the old-fashioned way, shipping your job over to China and India.
Yes, and quite a few have made that, hedge fund investors, all this. People betting on us to lose. I can't understand that. And the working family is carrying the brunt of that. I mean, every time we turn around, we see new billionaires created. And then we look at our unemployment rate. How can that be happening? How can that happen when you're creating new billionaires and your unemployment rate is steadily increasing? Something is wrong with that mix. Whatever economist said that this is the way America should go has the wrong direction.
Maybe they're working for the Chinese. I look at this and you just popped into my head. You were creating a couple of new billionaires all the time, but yet we've got some 50 million people living below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And that billionaire who made his money gambling on Wall Street pays 15% tax. As were you out there swinging a hammer in the hot sun in Florida, you're paying 35% tax, sweating your behind off. There's some fairness issues I think we have in this country where and one of the things I had for President Obama when he took office is that he would be that president that saved work in this country and re-incentivized work by changing that capital gains. I'm sorry. If you're sitting by the pool sipping margaritas, you should have to pay more tax than I am. I just as a matter of fairness, if I'm out there busting my behind.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. What we have to do, we have to basically let America know that the tax base, we are the tax base, and when we're not working...
But half of you don't pay federal taxes.
Half of us aren't working. Put us to work. Let us pay taxes.
Well, yeah, I would make the argument we're not making that kind of money that you can pay that.
And the other part is that the ones who are making the money, like you said, aren't paying their fair share. You know, years ago, and even now, I donate to United Way, and there's this little slip that comes out that said, you're... Pay your fair share. Why aren't we giving that to the millionaires and the billionaires? Pay your fair share.
Right when the collapse happened, we should have sent out envelopes and say, now look what the mess you made. Here's disaster relief for what you created. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Brian Dempsey, Secretary Treasurer of the Florida AFL-CIO. You know, Brian, I look down what's going on in Florida. Labor down there has done a remarkable job of mobilizing people, fighting back some real ugliness in a state that most people don't think is very strong labor-wise. And I guess that's a testament to the work you guys do down there.
Well, my president, Mike Williams, when he came on board, he said that we're all a family. And he said that we will act like a family. We will call all parties to the table, and meaning all labor comes to the table, including community organizations, faith-based organizations, any organizations that have workers, which is all organizations, because we all work. We'll call all of them to the table. We will listen to what they have to say, and then we will formulate a plan that will help all workers.
So you're not just a union movement, you're a worker movement.
Yeah, we're a labor movement. If you have a job and you work and you want a job, even if you don't have one right now, or you used to work, because we include our retirees in our effort. So no one is turned away from our table. We feel that everybody here is important. We play an important part of what we do, and we are very, very satisfied with the amount of people who come to the table and the amount of people who want to participate. And I think that's the thing. If we give people an opportunity to participate, they will. And that's what we formulated in Florida.
So now that you've come here to Ohio, what things have they done right here, do you think?
Well, first of all, they've opened the door to anyone who wanted to help. This is not just a fight in Ohio. This is a fight that's going all across the country. I mean, Ohio is one state. You got Wisconsin, you got Florida, you got all these different states that are under attack. So what Ohio did is open the doors for everyone who wanted to help to come in and help. Secondly, they put together an excellent team that went out to the community. They talked to people in the community about the needs. And in doing that, you brought people who may have not been involved in labor or unions before. You brought them all to the table so they'd understand that we are all workers. Once you do that, then you can educate. And they've done an excellent job here of educating the workers in the state of Florida.
Yeah, that's the important process. You know, I was a Teamster for more than 20 years, and I walked into the local high school with my Teamster's jacket on. You know, it's got the two horse heads.
Yeah.
And the kid goes, I see you work with horses. There's a huge disconnect there.
Right.
But it shows that we haven't reached out to the younger generation who knows very little about organized labor, who knows very little about workers' rights. This, I think, is an opportunity to reach out to them and begin that education process and to pull them into the fold, because that is the future of the labor movement.
And the Ohio AFL-CIO have done a great job in doing that in this campaign. I've had the opportunity to walk neighborhoods. The first day I got here, I got on the phone bank, and I called people here, and they're very responsive. They want to know what's going on, and once you educate them, they want to do the right thing. They want to vote the right way. As we walked the neighborhoods the past 2 days, what we've seen is that people are very interested in what's going on, but they just have to know what's going on. And once you inform them, wow, they want to participate in this system.
In talking to people, are you finding that the right wing has done a really masterful job in this country of over misinforming people, cluttering their mind with a whole bunch of this and that. How much are you finding that people are their initial reaction is something that is completely not true?
I'm finding quite a bit of that. What I'm finding is they have this concept of something being taken away. And that concept is that, well, these people have too much, and we should take away. Well, when you break it down to them as to actually what's happening, they've been misinformed. I mean, these are people that you live next to. These are people that are in your community. And you want to take away from your community? You want to take away from your neighbor? The concept was not presented to them in that way. They were misinformed.
Yeah, I look at there's a group here in Ohio, another very euphemistically named group called Building a Better Ohio. And they have a quote saying the government workers here in the state of Ohio make 43% more in wages and benefits than the private sector. And I'm going, 43%? No rational person in their right mind could ever come to that number. But, they just throw it out. And it's like a lot of things. You reach back behind you and you're... pop out a number, and there you go.
Exactly. And then we have to go out and defend that. We have to turn and educate people on why that number is just erroneous. It's just pulled out of the air. It's something to get your attention so they can confuse you. And we have to go back, and that's when the education part comes in. We have to educate them on what's been going on and what the actual numbers are. And what we find is that once people realize that they've been duped, and they don't like it.
And they get angry.
They get angry. And they want to go to the polls and they want to vote. But we have to do a better job of organizing. Ohio has taken the forefront in doing that. The AFL-CIO here has gone out and sent people out in the streets to educate people. They've taken their time to say, okay, when you knock on a door and that door opens, take the time to educate. Don't try to push agenda down anyone's throat.
Right.
They ask you a question, you explain. And when we've done that, people have been very receptive, and they wanted to know, okay, when do I need to vote? Where do I need to go vote? And, yes, I support you on voting no on issue two.
All right. I marvel at this 43%, and I think that maybe that government employee who's making all that money driving around must be driving around with the welfare queen who's driving around in the Cadillac that nobody can seem to find.
Exactly.
On that mystery road to the golden palaces on, because that's what they tell us. They make up all of these fictional characters. Oh, hey, there's the welfare queen, or oh, there's the small family farmer who lost the farm because of the estate tax. We just can't seem to find any of these folks. But I'm sure the folks here in Ohio are glad you're here from Florida. We're coming down to the wire. I'm going to let you go and make some more phone calls. Thanks so much.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Like I said, my president, Mike Williams, believes that we are a family, and what happens to one of us will happen to all of us. So we're glad to be here to help.
All right. Brian Dempsey, I appreciate the time. Secretary Treasurer of the Florida AFL-CIO. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
As an old country saying puts it, money is like manure. It does no good unless you spread it around. Yet, America's corporate and political leaders have intentionally been shoveling wealth into an ever bigger pile for those at the top. They've gotten away with this by lying to the great majority, which has seen its share of America's prosperity steadily disappearing. Yes, they've told us the rich are getting richer, but that's just the natural workings of the new global economy in which financial elites are rewarded for their exceptional talents, innovation, and bold risk-taking. Horse duties. The massive redistribution of America's wealth from the many to the few is happening because the rich and their political puppets have rigged the system. Years of subsidized offshoring and downsizing, gutting labor rights, monkey-wrenching the tax code, legalizing financial finagling, dismantling social programs, increasing the political dominance of corporate cash. These and other self-serving acts of the moneyed powers have created the conveyor belt that's moving our wealth from the grassroots to the penthouses. Not since the Gilded Age, which preceded and precipitated the Great Depression, have so few amassed so much of our nation's riches. Having learned nothing from 1929's devastating crash, nor from their own bank failures in 2008 that crushed our economy, the wealthiest of the wealthy fully intend to keep taking more for themselves at our expense. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, however, the people are on to their lies. In an October poll, two-thirds of Americans support increased taxes on millionaires, an end to corporate tax subsidies, and policies to more evenly distribute the wealth we all help create. This rising egalitarianism shows the true American character and is changing our politics for the better.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, now the good old union has come in here to
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You may remember John Kasich saying, if you think you're going to stop us, you're crazy. You will not stop us. You will not we will beat you. This is our chance. He says, if you're not on the bus, we're going to run you over with the bus. And he's not kidding. Here's the thing. He says, if you think I'm wrong, stop me. I think you've asked for it, so that's what's going on right now. And I'm sitting here with Larry Hanley. He's the international president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, ATU. Larry, thanks for taking time for me.
My pleasure, Rick.
Yeah, you look at what's going on here in the state of Ohio, and right now I've been saying this is the front lines of the class war because this is where the fight's at today.
That's right. You know, Kasich is nothing but a guided missile for the elite, for the rich in this country, aimed right at the heart of the middle class and the workers, and we're going to give it back to them today.
Yeah, you look what happened back in February in Wisconsin. We were there on the ground as Scott Walker began his assault on working people. Kasich's just the next in the line. As you see these dominoes hopefully continue to fall, do you see this attack stopping anytime soon?
Not soon. This is going to be a long struggle. The bottom line is that the very ultra-wealthy in this country have decided it's time to strip away every veneer of the middle class existence. And they're in for the long haul, and so are we. We're going to have to go out there and organize in every state and continue to be vigilant because as they spread their money around the country, they'll continue these attacks.
You know, back when Reagan fired the Patco workers, my grandfather, who was a 30-year Teamster, he said, expect this to continue because the boss doesn't want to sit next to you at the movie theater. He doesn't want to sit next to you at the restaurant. They need to put working people back in their place, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the stripping of wealth, especially when you look at the CBO report that just came out, said that the top 1% from 1979 to 2007 saw an after-tax increase of 275%. You and I, we barely kept up with inflation.
Well, John Kasich has been a warrior in this battle for many, many years. You know, he voted for NAFTA when he was in Congress. He worked for Lehman Brothers in his spare time. Obviously made a fortune working on behalf of the very wealthy in this country, and he intends, as does Scott Walker and several other governors, to continue this battle, and we intend to knock him out of office next. You know, after we're done here it's on to Wisconsin, and then we'll come back and we'll be ready for the next election in Ohio.
You know, this SB 5 fight, you know, largely from people who I talk to who are not union members, who are not involved in labor, they see it as a labor fight. How is this this fight here today? How is this the fight of the general public, of all workers, not just organized workers?
It's really simple. You know, public workers were under attack for a long time in this country. But 10 years ago, I'm from New York, and 10 years ago on September 11th, we really found out what the value of a public worker was.
Yeah.
I had members of my local. I was the local president in Staten Island, New York, on September 11, 2001. And members of my local and four other ATU locals in New York City evacuated school children and adults from the Trade Center. There were trains operated by members of the TWU that held where the motormen held their trains in the station while the buildings collapsed above them, just so they could get the last person out. These were acts of heroism on the part of everyday public sector workers. But more than that, you know, I had friends who were firefighters who literally died running up the stairs when everybody else was running down. And everywhere I go, I remind people of people like Mike Boyle, who was a friend of mine and a firefighter in New York. His father, Jimmy, was the president of their union. And Mike was off duty on September 11th, and he heard the alarm. He jumped on a truck, and he got to Tower 1 just in time to die. Now, that's what government workers do when called upon. And the public understood it then. Who would have thought in 2001 that people like John Kasich could flip the script, and instead of having us pursue Osama bin Laden, he and his ilk are out there pursuing the pensions and health care of government workers, of people who save lives, firefighters, cops, bus drivers, nurses. That's what they're about. They've exposed themselves. They would not have had the guts to do that 10 years ago.
No, absolutely not. But don't you remember when those cops and those firefighters and those public sector workers crashed the economy? Don't you remember that?
No, I missed that. Somehow I was sleeping that night.
Because that's the message we're being sold. We're being sold that somehow, because folks have health care and they have pensions and they have a little job security, that somehow this is what's destroyed our economy.
Right, and if you fight back against a guy like Kasich, who worked on Wall Street, who made money on Wall Street, whether or not he ever worked, I have no idea. But if you fight back against people like him while they take away middle-class pensions and health care, then you're a class warrior. Sign me up.
Absolutely. But, you know, here's the thing. We keep hearing this. We need, you know, times are tough. We need to roll up our sleeves, shared sacrifice. I'm not seeing any sharing.
Oh, there is no sharing. The bottom line is the wealthy in this country have gotten richer and richer every year over the last 40, and they have no intent on stopping it. They intend now to take away every last vestige that the middle class had in terms of survival, in terms of having hope. You know, I have kids, and I really don't want my children to live in the kind of world that John Kasich and his ilk are trying to create.
Well, they want to take us back to the 90s.
They're banana Republicans. They want to make the U.S. a banana republic. That's really what it's all about. And, well, they're very close to it.
Yeah, they want to take us back to the 90s.
That's right.
The 1890s.
That's right.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Larry Handley, international president of the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union. You know, I look at this, and this SB 5 fight, what happened in Wisconsin, all of the occupations that are going around the country. This is exciting stuff. This is what I think is going to save the labor movement, because it's going to bring us back to talking to each other and getting out in the streets and having that education process that I think is so vital, since, you know, we've had 30 years of assault on workers' rights and on unions in particular.
Working people are struggling every day to make a living, to get their kids through school. But our kids have now found themselves in a place where they hit a brick wall, where they got out of college or they got out of high school, and they found out there is no present for them. They don't have a job to go and struggle with. They just can't get one. So they have no present, no future, and they are leading the way. They're telling us it's time. And I have been inspired. The members of my union, our general executive board, all voted unanimously to endorse the Wall Street occupation. And our members all over the country and in Canada are being inspired by the fact that these young people are standing up.
You know, you look at just some new information that came out because of the census report. It showed that the typical household, headed up by people 65 and older, had a net worth 47 times that greater than the folks headed up by 35 and younger. And where that's going to take us is to where we're splitting, where the wealth class will divide us, mm-hmm. young and old, with the goal being, let's destroy Social Security, because I've heard one of the Bush kids say that he'll see a UFO before he sees a Social Security check. Mm-hmm. So, again, there's another line that's being divided,
that's
another
right.
opportunity to put you and I at odds.
But remember, when our parents grew up, this generation of middle-class people who have some wealth in this country, they grew up at a time when there were three times as many union members as a percentage of the population than there are now. It was the fact that they organized and they had unions and therefore they had power and they had a voice that changed their entire generation's economic outlook. And what's happened since then is as people like Kasich have taken our jobs and sent them to China and other places, they've taken away our unions. And as they've stripped the middle class of their unions, they've stripped us of our ability to fight back and our children of their hope.
What I find amazing is Kasich, much like Senator Toomey in Pennsylvania, father was a union member. He actually grew up with the benefits of a solidly middle-class existence because of his father being a union member.
That's right. And Kasich's been in denial ever since, but look who's paying him.
Well, good point. And you look at these attacks going on, you know, the fact that you've got people like, you know, the Koch brothers and the Scapes and the, you know, the whole billionaire class who now feel emboldened that they can come out and be in front of this stuff as we're in the years past. They kind of held in the shadows.
Well, France had King Louis and Marie Antoinette, and maybe it's time Americans got a guillotine because actually they're acting in the same manner.
Absolutely.
They're treating us like serfs. They're trying to take away every opportunity we have to make a living. And it's time that we fight back, and I think we're getting great leadership on Wall Street, but not from the people in the buildings, the people outside.
And to that point, you know, the mainstream corporate-controlled media is doing everything they can possibly do to demonize or narrow or marginalize these people out there. But I think they're hitting the essence of the problems and have done a masterful job of changing the conversation. We are now talking about wealth inequality. We're now talking about sane regulations on Wall Street. We're talking about health care and things that are really important instead of, you know, who ran off with the bride or who... what shiny thing of the week just popped up?
That depends what cable network you watch. But there's no question that in the last, September 16th, we had a different world. On September 17th, when the Occupy Wall Street movement began, they began to change the entire national and global dialogue. People are now seeing what the real issues are. And I think that's the point you just made. It's that, you know, people are now beginning to understand the kind of the argument that's been going on at 20,000 feet. It's reached ground level on account of those kids taking that park.
You know, we've gone to several of these occupations, and, you know, for me, none of the things that we're talking about seem to be new because it's stuff that we've been talking about in this program for years, wealth inequality and all of the Glass-Steagall stuff and all of that. And the people that I meet there, they're discovering this for the first time.
That's right.
And a couple of the people that I have talked to, they said, you know what, for the first time I feel that my voice matters. And it's that sense of power that I, as a union member, all of my working life have had from day one that they're just now discovering. And I think this is something very powerful.
Well, yeah, and again, it's happening all over the world. In London, there have been riots in the streets over the same issues. In Greece, the same thing is going on. So we are at that point, I think, where the public dialogue is beginning to get real. It's really the public dialogue is now turning to the important issues of the day, and I think that it's going to make a big difference.
So in looking from Ohio forward, where do you see this going? You know, some people are saying Indiana is the next battlefront, but do you see the engagement continuing? Because I think what has to happen is you have to keep people engaged and keep them in the process and keep everybody moving in the same direction.
Until the very wealthy in this country begin to understand that workers are going to fight them and are going to take them on and are going to understand just what they're doing to our society. Until then, this battle will continue. When the really rich and the elitists in this country figure out that the game's up, then we'll have peace. But I think we're heading into a period of protracted labor unrest and protracted civil unrest. I think that this is not just a question of a bunch of kids occupying Wall Street. And by the way, I just want to point out something that has not been talked much about. But, you know, you all remember the scene on September 11th when that thick cloud of dust enveloped Manhattan Island or the southern part of Manhattan Island. You know, since then, the bankers have laid down through Fox News and other things their own thick cloud of dust. And the park, Liberty Park, they call it, is where this whole occupation is happening. It's about a block from the World Trade Center. It's about a block from Ground Zero. And, you know, to me, it's just that I just have to say that these young people are a beacon through that thick cloud of smoke and dust that Wall Street has laid down all over the country and all over the world. And I just think we all ought to seize the opportunity. We certainly talk to all our members all over the country and in Canada, where an Occupy movement is also beginning, by the way. And, you know, we are very careful to point out, and we have been, many of the issues that are being raised by the Occupy kids. There are less than 1%, one-tenth of 1% of the people in this country that is sucking all the wealth to the top.
And that's part of the problem. You look at John Boehner, the Speaker of the House from Ohio here, saying, well, how much do you want the wealthy to pay?
I don't know. Can I cry for a minute, please? Okay. How much? Well, exactly. Their fair share. How about that? What's wrong with a fair share? You know, how much do you want a poor person to pay? Their
more.
Fair share, period.
They want more. All I keep hearing the presidential candidates talking about is they need to have skin in the game is what I keep hearing. 46% of the people pay no federal tax, I keep hearing.
There was a time when the staunchest Republican in this country would not even conceive of standing up and saying that Americans should lose their Social Security and Medicare. In my lifetime, my grandmother got cancer, and she went into a hospital in Manhattan. And when she arrived, she had to undergo surgery, but they would not perform the surgery on her until her four children came in and signed away their houses to guarantee that they would pay for that surgery. This is in 1958, in my lifetime. And 6 years later, the country started to change and started to talk about social issues that were important, including getting Medicare, health care for our elderly. Yep. And now these people are trying to turn it all back. It's just there wasn't a person around then in the Republican Party who would take the positions that they're taking today.
Yeah, I mean, they're just completely lost, and they elected, to make Ronald Reagan be some grand saint. He would be unrecognizable in today's Republican
That's
Party.
That's right. And Richard Nixon would be more liberal than our current president on economic issues.
But, you know, the earned income tax credit that they complained so much about was actually proposed by Milton Friedman,
mm-hmm. That's right.
Which is somebody else that they deified. It's just, you're right, it's mind-blowing. Larry Hanley, great talking with you, international president of the Amalgamated Transit Union. Thanks for being here. I'd like to talk to you.
Thank you, Rick.
I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
United
We're working divided, people. Come to talk.
Divided, we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, undivided. We shall live before. Remember all. We need to trust in and then forever call our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can rely on it. The time is time. Planets aligned. Ain't no mistaking. For union resurrection. The anger has awakened. Has awakened. The sleeping giant. Come on, now we can do it. We need to revive, react, and re-up the labor movement. Anything in life. You win some, lose some, but live to do it again. Stripping people of their right is not the solution. We need to make our voices heard. We cannot let them silence us. We need to make them think before they even think to try of us. In the union, in this great united union of America. Every state's a member, remember United States of America. Every other aspect of life, unions are respected. We need to fight so the unity of workers is not neglected.
Si se puede.
Believe that a little hard work is good for the soul. If this is true, then the history of child workers in the United States is a soulful tale. The first child laborers landed in Virginia in the year 1619. These immigrant children found slave working conditions and poverty wages in the New World. As the years passed, little changed. The average child worker toiled 16 to 18 hours per day, 6 days a week in factories and textile mills. Education was a luxury, and many believed a loss on working children. Charles Harding, president of the Merchants Woolen Company, stated, "There is
such a thing as too much education for working people sometimes. I have seen cases where young people are spoiled for labor by too much refinement. Labor unions, consumer groups, and parent coalitions all work to shorten hours, ease conditions, and ultimately end exploitive child abuses. Baby strikes in Paterson, New Jersey, and Allentown, Pennsylvania, demanding 11 and 12-hour workdays were fought vehemently by mill and factory owners. The Pennsylvania legislature was the first to consider prohibiting child workers in 1833, and consider is all Pennsylvania did until July of 1903, when Mother Jones led the March of the Mill Children from Philadelphia to Oyster Bay, New York, in an attempt to influence President Theodore Roosevelt. In 1836, Massachusetts was the first state to pass a law restricting the use of children in manufacturing. And 102 years later, the United States Supreme Court ruled the Walsh-Healy Act restricting the use of child labor as constitutional. Also in 1938, Congress passed the Fair Labor Standards Act, which put more stringent restrictions on the use of child labor. While hard work teaches discipline, self-reliance, and responsibility, the exploitive nature of our past must remind us that what we have today, we mustn't take for granted, for the days of tomorrow are doomed to repeat if we ignore those lessons hard learned. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Rebels are we. Though heavy our hearts shall always be. Ah, no ball or chain, no prison shall keep rid of rebels and a sacred heart. I said no ball or chain, no prison shall keep rid of rebels and a sacred heart.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So we're here in Columbus, Ohio, and I got kind of get a kick out of this Ohio treasurer and senatorial candidate, this guy named Josh Mandel. He said he's been supportive of SB 5. He says it's about respecting police and respecting firefighters and teachers and ensuring that there is a state and that there is a local government long into the future, so that we have communities here in the state. I don't really know what the hell he's talking about. The idea is we're going to steal wages from these people. We're going to, maybe like they do down in Georgia, maybe we use convicted felons to man our firehouses. Maybe that's conservative world. I'm sitting here with Dan Stewart, former Ohio State Representative, also the State Director of Working America. Dan, thanks for taking time for me.
You bet.
I look at this Ohio treasurer and I go, you know, what exactly is he talking about? We're going to gut their wages. We're going to steal their rights away. Why? And you respect police, fire, teacher? I'm missing you.
Well, I think the hypocrisy that we've seen all across the board on those who voted for support Senate Bill 5 is, I think, clearly obvious. The public has kind of caught on to this, that you can't have it both ways. I used to think that these elected officials or those running love to embrace police firefighters and wrap themselves in the flag at election time when they wanted their commercials produced, those kind of things. But when they ask for anything like a fair residency rule or collective bargaining, as I was trying to pass to return collective bargaining to firefighters and townships who lost them, if the township itself had gone below 5,000, even though they served a city like our suburb here, Grove City, of 35, 40,000, they'd lose their collective bargaining rights if the township itself had. So we passed that in the House and even had Republican support on it and co-sponsors. And then they went 180 degrees the other way, that they said, this was the way to save money, to balance the budget. And that's all a bunch of baloney. You know, it wasn't true. It still isn't true. And I think that the public has catched on, you know, has caught on to this. And they're going to have a hard time explaining,
there's an election coming up next year.
Exactly. And I think that...
because, you know, the truth of the matter is you can't go to the people and say, do you remember when those cops and firemen crashed the economy?
Right, exactly.
Because they didn't.
Right. And, you know, in Ohio,
but that's what they're trying to do.
And what we did here for a while was continue to reduce taxes for the wealthy. We got rid of the corporation tax. We got, eliminated the inheritance tax. And however you may feel about all this, it reduced the amount of money available. They had continued in the legislature to try to whittle away, cut away at local government funds and on collective bargaining rights. So
then they just decided to do it all in one fell swoop. I think they needed a scapegoat in some place, and this was just as easy as an excuse as any.
Yeah, I don't see how you can justify stealing from cops and firemen and teachers with one hand, and then with the other giving corporations hundreds of millions of dollars. And I look where, the area that I grew up in, the Cleveland area, they gave American Greetings, I think it was $105 million, and then the company went and shook down the little communities there for some more money.
And, I don't know that you can even prove that any of these, some of us, when I was still in the legislature, said when they were passing or phasing in the final part of former Governor Taft's tax cuts that would have given people making over $1 million an additional $8,000 a year tax cut in Ohio beyond what they had already had their taxes cut. And we said, well, what are you doing? Let's, hold off. Let's delay this implementation. And at the press conference, they said, well, what do you say to people that cutting taxes like that creates job? And even some of the colleagues of that reporter laughed, said, yeah. I said, how's that working out for us? I don't think that's really helping. People who make the decisions about where to locate, business executives, the site selection people, say it's issues of education of the workforce, infrastructure, quality of life, access to market, the highways, all those, safety of crime, all those things that tax dollars are paid for. And so I think what we're really doing is we're hurting our chances. I think that when companies look at what's happened in the Valley, the Mahoning Valley, or in the Cleveland area, and they say, rundown area, reduced services, higher crime, that's not a place that they may want to locate. So I think that, it's more investing. And so here we go the opposite way. We reduce dollars for local government, for public services, and then blame them. And it was, how long ago was 9/11 where, these
couldn't
were the folks
wrap our arms around
we couldn't
them.
Get close enough to these public servants. And I think that they really, this case, just bit off more than they could chew. They woke a sleeping, bear, and it's coming back to bite them.
I've taken the position that it was really a dumb thing to do because, if you had just continued on the path, labor was slowly declining as the dying a death of a thousand cuts. Now by really going after them full tilt, you brought them all together, and now there's a fight.
Well, I think that's a great point, and I think that it brings back the inherent reason organized labor grew and was so important to begin with. People have often said to me when I worked in organized labor and even my time in the legislature, well, there was a time where we needed to organize labor and, to protect people in the factories and health. I go, do you remember the weekend? Health and safety, child labor laws, those kind of things. And they don't think of it in the modern terms of what organized labor can do and giving workers a voice. Henry Ford was the biggest capitalist in the world, but he knew he had to pay a living wage so that the workers could buy his cars. And you can't buy a car or even a flat-screen television on Walmart salary, And so in Ohio, there's another good example of that. We spend tens of millions of dollars in public subsidies to employees of the Walmarts and the big box stores and the, other large corporations who don't pay a living wage and don't have benefits. So it's another example of corporate welfare.
Now, we've done a very nice job of lining their pockets. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Dan Stewart, Director of Working America, also a former state legislator here in the state of Ohio. Let's talk about Working America for a minute. As the state director, I'm sure you've covered a good portion of the state here in Ohio, as we, I know the folks in Pennsylvania have done. When you're out talking to these people, what are they saying? What direction are they giving you?
Well, with our canvas staff and those of us who have been out, at the doors and on the phones, we've had literally hundreds of thousands of conversations and doors that we've knocked on. And we have offices now in Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Canton. And across the board, people have found, have shared that they feel that Senate Bill 5 is unfair, that they, felt that it was a shot at working people, even if they themselves were not union members, because Working America traditionally doesn't knock on doors of union households, at least knowingly, because they have somebody representing them.
Right.
we knock on doors. Now, during this whole Senate Bill 5 campaign, where we've had probably over 170,000 conversations statewide about Senate Bill 5, we've knocked on all doors to get a sense of where people were on Senate Bill 5. And I think, you know, I would say that 65% or higher, you know, felt that it was unfair and that it was a real shot at working people's rights. And again, whether they were union members or not. And so I think that that was one thing. The other thing we do is to listen to them about their concerns. You know, the folks who got elected that passed Senate Bill 5 and are now in charge of the state ran on, it's about the economy, it's about jobs. Well, nobody has seen any kind of effort to create jobs, to do things that would start to create jobs, invest in things that would start to create jobs. So I think that that is also another thing that has bothered people. It's like, hey, you know, you're doing all this stuff. Where are the jobs?
Yeah, there are a bunch of abortion bills out there. There's a bunch of voter ID bills out there. Nothing.
There was the guns and bars, and I don't know, maybe that'll create some more jobs for the ER attendants. I don't know. But
if you remember the guy who in Tennessee who proposed that in the legislature, there was actually arrested for DUI while carrying a gun. So you know, a little poetic justice, I guess, on some level. Let's take it back here to SB 5 because, you know, if I remember when this thing passed, I remember going, you know, this is kind of a really backdoor way of doing it. They actually replaced somebody on one of the committees because I guess he wasn't going to vote the right way. And while I guess it's not illegal here in this state to do it, it seems kind of immoral, at least unethical.
Well, and I think all across the time from the beginning of this legislative session and the efforts to pass Senate Bill 5, you just saw blatant efforts to disregard explanations of what you're doing and how you're doing it. And, you know, there were several members in the Republican Senate who didn't think that this was fair. Conservative members of the Ohio Senate Republican caucus who were not pro-union, who felt that, you know.
Then why'd they go along with it?
Of them did not, and that's the one, for instance, the one chairman that you mentioned, Senator Bill Sainz out of Cincinnati, who voted no, who described it sort of like he's from Cincinnati, so he used the Cincinnati Bengals to I'm sure, the chagrin of any of your Pennsylvania listeners, that he said it's sort of like the beginning, and the Bengals come out, and, the referee has the coin and said, heads I win, tails you lose, that there was no way, he explained, and another conservative senator said similar things, Senator Grindel from the north part of Ohio said the same thing. There was no way for working people to collectively bargain to actually win. There wasn't any way that you could sit down and win under the Senate Bill 5, win any concessions, win any of the fights. It was stacked completely against them. And these were not people who were favorable to labor unions or organized labor in general. So I think that there was a sense of we're going to do this our way, any way we have to. And I've heard that, I think, too, from our members of Working America, that the process was troublesome.
Especially from the people who told you they were going to be the party of accountability and transparency and all of that, which
absolutely
really hasn't happened. Because this seems like a thief in the night thing.
It does. And I think that, you know, why they get frustrated, and while I was frustrated, and I've never been more disappointed in government in my life when I saw this process, I guess I felt some encouragement when I saw people go out, people of all stripes and political persuasions, our members of Working America and others who went out and got the 1.3 million signatures along with organized labor and others to put this thing on the ballot. Because to me it saw this energy that arose that, you know, that people could take back their government, that, you know,
that sense of empowerment.
They could demand accountability and you know, you have to have things like that or recall capabilities or whatever it takes to have some, control over those who are supposed to be working for the public.
Yeah. You know, last question I've got for you, you know, as this thing's going forward and you guys have knocked on, you know, hundreds of thousands of doors and made, you know, hundreds of thousands of contacts, where after this does this go? You know, the hope is that it doesn't just stop, that this communication continues and that it grows into a larger worker movement, not union, non-union, but a worker movement.
Well, and I think that that's, I think, our hope. We hope to have a victory, first of all, tonight and repeal Senate Bill 5 by having people vote no on Issue 2. And I think that that will happen. I'm encouraged about that. I think, too, we want to have as big a victory as we possibly can have to send a message. And then, three, is how do we take this to the next step? With Working America, when we talk with our members and have dialogue, how we can help them continue to be engaged, to be involved, easy ways for them to participate in the process by having legislative forums, by meeting with their elected officials more often, to have accountability not only from the state legislators, our local government, our national representatives, but corporations and those who often put us in this place. It wasn't, as you said earlier, police, firefighters, teachers, and public employees that got in this situation. You know, they weren't the Wall Street bandits. So I really hope that what we can do is start to be now on a proactive movement to make them more accountable and spend time on things like creating good jobs and fair wages and strong communities and a stronger nation. Invest in what has made us strong.
Absolutely. And you drive around my hometown of Cleveland, and boy, I'll tell you, some investment could really needed.
Absolutely.
Dan Stewart, I appreciate the time. State Director of Working America here in Ohio, also a former state representative. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people have the talk.
Radio of, for, and by working people. The Rick Smith Show.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in labor's forgotten massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at thericksmithshow.com. Or if you've got the Stitcher app, make sure you can download that app and take your class war on the go. I want to thank everyone for joining us here in Columbus, Ohio on this historic evening. Again, you know, I'm just taken back by all the people we've met, all the great folks who are out knocking on doors and making phone calls, coming from across the country, to protect workers' rights here in Ohio. And look, you know, this was the front lines of the class war. This, tonight, this was it. Hopefully, from this point forward, we can fight back some of the more egregious stuff going on around the country. Maybe we've stopped what happens in Pennsylvania. Maybe we don't have to fight these fights back home, which is why we came here to Columbus to participate. And what I'm saying is history. And this is labor history. The great folks here at the Ohio AFL-CIO, very hospitable, opened their doors to us and let us come in and talk to their people and bring you the inside story. We had a great evening tonight. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is the best place to go and do that. And, you know, as we go forward, we're going to continue to examine what's going on here in Ohio, to look at what went right, what we can improve on, and how we build a true workers' movement, a true working class majority in this country, so that we don't have to keep fighting these battles and that our children will have a better tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio.